where we are met with cynicism and doubt and those who tell us that we can't, we will respond with that timeless creed that sums up the spirit of a people. Yes, we can. Yes, 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 it's time. We all come together. Ah, God for one of us.
Yes, we can.
Greetings, everyone.
Aloha. It is the 17th in the 11th month. We never break down the 11th, so that's an 8. And now we're talking about the cosmic Christ energy again, coming on a day like this. And it's also talking about the true wealth, which is golden. And that's on the ray of Lord Kutumi, who, again, is on the ray of soul. The thing that's interesting about this is that we put in the Black Madonna on the Blu-ray of Archangel Michael as well, as well as on Lady Master Justice, the Ruby Ray, the Blu-ray of the Virgin Consciousness of our divine emotion unscathed. And that's the high heart energy coming through as pure as the snow. And so what is it? It's the birth and it's the rebirth. It's continuing on the ascension spiral of the coil of the caduceus of two serpents coming together in perfect harmony, the giving and the receiving. Getting seated, a higher understanding of how we're going to have this divine government flow and bring justice. I speak Lady Master not as we lose today in the sense that we're getting really close to numerous announcements of various members of the 13 families and their cohorts being arrested.
Yes, the stories are going to the sky with what is going on, where I would say that as we are going into this time that is approaching Ophiuchus as well as Scorpio and the energies that are transforming this into the Phoenix Rising, which has to do with the healing of all worlds and the healing of us. We are witnessing these war criminals being called out and taken to task, if you will, metaphorically and verbally and everything. And let's just say at this point, love them even more. As Ashtar and Sananda have always said, these guys chose to put on the dark hats and play this game at this time. And it's come to the level where this man, the Syrian commander, is doing all he can to do what is the right thing to tell what is going on out here in a level way where it is coming from a place of peace and balance rather than one of war and adversarial games. And he is a master at this. He's not a PhD for nothing. This guy's a constitutional lawyer and he rescinded his bar. British accredited regency, just like Bill Clinton. And the stories go to the sky. I mean, in the last day or two, I talked to Susan McDougall, who her husband yesterday, and this ties in with David Brock of MediaMatters.org. And David Brock with Susan McDougall started MediaMatters.org, yet she is the silent partner that David Brock is the front man, and Mr. David Sirota, who sat in for Tom Hartman for the last 2 days,
is also connected with MediaMatters.org. Whistleblowers doing the work, good work together now. What happened to Susan McDougall, just to refresh everybody's memory, is that she knew too much, and she was subpoenaed by Kenneth Starr.
That's right.
To testify against Bill Clinton, and she refused.
And she sat in jail.
And he put her in jail for 18 months.
Yes. Yep.
And she even got on Larry King Live.
From jail.
From jail to tell her story. What year was that? That was 2006, 5?
No, that was like...
Earlier?
98,
99. Yeah, it was great. Yeah. Everybody knows now that there is a time for reckoning. come. And what she did is she knew about things that the 13 families required of those who knew these things in order to stay alive. And her husband, I forgot his first name, yet he was taken to a prison cell in Texas. I remember where Texas, I keep thinking down, but the thing is that he was put there, and he was put there in solitary confinement, and then he was executed in that state. And they said that, well, they said that he died. Yes, I think they gave him all kinds of stuff. I can't remember.
Oh, they messed with him and killed him in prison.
Yes, they did. And nonetheless, why is this coming up? Because we also had a conversation about Bill Clinton and Hillary with
Susan McDougall.
And tell again what she said.
She said that these two are not out of the water yet.
The woods.
Or the woods. And they have committed war crimes just like Mr. Scherf Sr., Jr., and all the rest that are tied in with this fake family called Bush. If you want to know some of the real truth about this, go to familyofsecrets.com. And this guy, Mr. Russ Baker, is telling the truth about this story that goes all the way back to Don't Cry for Me, Argentina, where 100,000 Nazis were brought in through Evita and Perón. And this story is about the OSS and CIA, NSA, DEA, and I could go on for the next 2 hours with three-letter names that have to do with agencies that would scare the hair off of most anyone. And it's tied in, like Ashtar said, yesterday, we're not going to talk about Mengele and the games. This is about love.
And forgiveness.
And forgiveness.
And mercy and
justice and peace. Namaste.
And divine compassion through it all.
Yes.
And I go back to, even though this is coming from section two, which have had other opinions about how to behave about this. And indeed, when you're on the inside of this evilness, and are required to stay aligned again as those who do that and go into that darkness, they volunteer to help. Not necessarily because they are not who they are, because they are who they are. And all of us have done things good, bad, and ugly.
Today on Tom Hartman, David Sirota was sitting in and he talked about the free trade agreement that is being set up with South Korea, where the U.S. wishes to lower South Korea's, they're asking South Korea to lower their standards to comply with USA standards in terms of automobiles, and it's like slapping the face of these folks in the sense of saying, hey, you know, you guys should come down the pole a bit to us, where our standards, you know, we go ahead and unwittingly, supposedly, poison our societies with the poisons where our safety standards of our automobiles do not meet South Korea because they are so rigorous in terms of making things good for the people, even though just across the border there is this thing called the DMZ, and Mr. Kim Jong-il, who is completely, he's got this real crazy fanaticism, also bordering on, what is it called, stalker, Mr. Kim Jong-il, elder, the senior, not the junior, he's got a fear and fascination with Julia Roberts, the actress from, you know, Pretty Woman. And you know, Mr. Kim Jong-il is a real sick man. Love him even more. All of this has to do with how the ancient black dragon is moving into the white dragon and the stories that go to the sky, how the Pleiadians and the Syrians and the Lyrians of Wait and the Vagans have waged war, and it's all ending right now. And these pieces of the story are getting told now, how these folks are having to ante up to the man with the plan here, who was a shaman, who was a teacher, who is the commander-in-chief of all the forces, Admiral Sananda Kumara. And this story goes so deep with what is happening right now, where we are on the edge of first contact, full disclosure, like any second. And
which is what Larry Curley and Moe
said on Monday.
Said on Monday. That's setting a tone for the week. They said now that Barack is back, that this could happen even initiated.
Faster.
It could be initiated somewhere still within this week. And I would just say, this is a really big sign, remembering that Lady Di was Sarah again.
The new
first
Sarah.
And she's the new Sarah now.
Nasara.
Nasara, National Economic Security and Reform, or Reform Asian. The reformation of the lineage of the grandmothers and the mothers and the great-grandmothers.
And Lady Di knows all the combinations of all the codes for all the projects, 78 of them, all the dossiers, all the information, whereas you remember in the movie, The Da Vinci Code, when they had to go to a special vault and they had to stick in this electronic key to go into this vault to look for the special puzzle device, you know, to decode the story of the Da Vinci Code. And I'm just saying, Lady Di knows where all of it is, and she's back with brass balls on, and at the right time, she will come forward and sit on the Stone of Stone after Nasara is announced. All of this has to do right now with what Prince William is doing by wedding his beloved
Kate Middleton.
This is about the healing between the East and the West, and Prince Charles will have to answer for his crimes as part of the story that is going on here to this guy. And it all has to do with what was planned before 9/11, where they took out JFK Sr. and his beloved, and Paul Wellstone, and all the whistleblowers that are going on that had led up to 9/11. And today, Randy Rhoads talked about this for 2 hours, where she let it rip, and she just said, in no uncertain terms, you know, she told a story, and it's out there. Yet it may not be the same story that people have heard. There was a man down in Florida at an airport, and he got groped, as it were, and let's just say he broke that man's hand for groping him, and he got arrested. And Randy Rhoads had him and Mike Papantonio on the air, and they brought it up, and they said, after 9/11 and the story of my pet goat, this is where we are at, where you're at the airport. You take your shoes off.
you get a full X-ray in terms of gamma rays, where maybe it'll turn you into the Hulk, maybe it won't. And at the same time, the stories that go to the sky of what they do with the X-rays right now, where they say they don't store them, yet they store them in Florida. That's what Keith just reported on Countdown not more than an hour ago. And all of this has to do with what Mike Papantonio said. It's time to arrest Bush and Cheney right now. Not 1 second more.
Where was Mike Papantonio again?
On the radio.
With who?
Randy Rhodes.
Randy Rhodes, wow. That's a good combination, everybody.
This is today. It is about what is being said, where we will not stand for the war crimes that are going on, yet it will be done lawfully. And Randy Rhodes also brought up Eric Holder, where she said, Eric Holder, you're not upholding and defending the Constitution.
That's correct.
You should step down and recuse yourself because you have violated your oath of office.
Well, that's why, as he does not do that, then he needs to be arrested too.
Indeed.
I would say it would be Patrick Fitzgerald that would step in.
That's correct.
And he would take over that position. That's a biggie. And that brings Lady Mastronata right into the mix here. She's the one that gives the orders to deliver our buckpox, as Harry
put it.
Our backpack. That means we need that song, Valerie, Valera, Valerie, Valera, ha, 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 my knapsack on my back. I'm a wanderer, a magical wanderer.
The fool. Yes.
Absolutely. Who knows that when he jumps off a cliff with his little knapsack on
his
back.
And his little white dog.
And his little white dog, meaning that little Syrian inner child, which is connected with that dolphin constellation. And that movie, Kirk and
Spock,
that was 1984 Thanksgiving time, and it was called Star Trek No. 4, and it was about the return of the dolphin people.
The whales. Humpback whales. Humpback whales, of all the whales, are an interesting species because they are closest to humans because they are human souls.
Well, they're not the only ones that are human souls.
No, there are others that have chosen to enter whale bodies and dolphin and orca bodies, and orcas are not killer.
There is this dolphin. It's called the pilot dolphin.
Right.
And the female cows, as they call them, of the sea, they have a menses like our human female.
Right.
Cycle. And that, to me, makes them on that level, definitely there isn't any of the other dolphin communities that actually do that.
Right.
That makes something in the preservation of that particular dolphin without it being compromised in the sea. And also capable of helping out with the female, of all species, with that energy of divine mana, pure, higher, golden, cosmic light, as in the golden compass, coming back to Earth and coming back to all species. That means also all divine kingdoms that we are all part of. And that Syrian dog with that fool, which is 0 point, in other words, the divine neutrality is that place, that quantum leap where we fly, which means we jump from the consciousness of gravity to the consciousness of anti-gravity as a planet. and consciousness, then the energies that have been coming in through all the portals and the 0 point module activity on the step pyramids, what do they call them in Iraq? They call them
ziggurats.
And then somebody was talking again about the Ural. Was that on that little 8 minute thing? Or,
oh, the Siberian shamans.
Or that 14 minutes?
Yeah.
That we might want to play.
Yeah.
Because, and then let's just say there are ceremonies that have been going on and continue to go on where the grandmothers and the shamans, female and male, are doing these ceremonies all over Mother Earth. And Lady Master Diana Rito, she said, watch this piece. That's on
worldlinktv.org. Global Spirit, and this is about the shamans that are from Greenland, as well as from the Mayan civilization, and the stories that are being
Two shamans, one
right.
male from Iceland,
Greenland,
right, and the other female from Maya land, actually.
Guatemala.
And having a discourse with the host, and including a clip of footage from when shaman grandmothers and grandfathers and from many places came to Greenland and did ceremony, and that's like in the northernmost point. It's like what imagine what's her name twin flame of
John Yoko Ono,
why she put that light.
The peace light,
and it was that absolutely gorgeous blue light, and it went up how many thousand feet?
You can see it from space.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember how many feet up in the air, a couple thousand.
Yeah.
Just amazing. And of course they took out their people in terms of their way of life was just completely utter
economic collapse. If you go see the movie Inside Job, this story tells it all. And you've heard today this character, Bruno, I call him, but, Victor Bout, who is supposedly the great, you know, he was selling nuclear secrets to various countries. He was a former Russian general, and some kind of extradition going on. Victor Bout, also, there's a story out there that he's been sitting in a prison with Bernie Madoff, sharing secrets. And this goes to all the different crime families across this planet, where the end of the war is at hand, and there shall be peace.
By the way, everybody, the phone number here is 530-413-4511-4515-4520.
Please call in.
And we left a lot of pieces out of this puzzle, yet we're what else did we miss in terms of hard news? Anything? Let's see. What today you talked to somebody today?
I got to talk to David Sirota off the air that was sitting in for Tom Hartman, and David Sirota was just saying it is at a fever's pitch in terms of how desperate these war criminals are to pull off anything and distract from the stories that are real, which are the eroding away of the people's rights, where as these teabag folks are stepping in right now in terms of the Congress, all of this has been funded unlawfully by foreign corporations, where the Citizens United case that the Supreme Court unlawfully ruled on. Foreign corporations can support people like Kim Jong-il, and who supports John McCain or Sarah Palin for president, and we're not going there. And I'm just saying, this is why Saint Germain is here doing this now, and he will continue to remove folks. And
we have to also notice that there are things, movements, other movements going on at the same time in terms of this fiasco with the banks and Michael Moore coming on and connecting the dots. And tonight on Keith Olbermann, he brought on this insurance.
Wendell Potter,
and that's very, very critical.
This story about Sicko, if you have not seen Sicko yet, please rent it. We need to have free health care. What we have right now is health insurance reform. We do not have single health care, single payer. It needs to be free health care, like this whole story began. And the story is about the fact that a black man is doing this. And these folks who had the melanin drained from their skin do not like this. And
you have a caller. Okay, come on, call.
Denise is on line A1.
Greetings, Lady Master.
Hi, Tara and Rama. I always get so nervous when I call in, so forgive me.
We're all soul family here, all of us.
Well, thank you. I wanted to make a comment about what you were saying about Eric Holder. Were you guys aware that President Obama signed an executive order before he went on his trip? And it was for the order of succession within the Department of Justice.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Somebody had mentioned it, and I thought, well, I better check that out. So I'm on the White House website, and it's there. It's dated November 4th.
What is the order of succession, Rama?
I don't know exactly. Yet there are. What exactly are? Does it? I'm not there.
Okay, it says the following officers in the order listed shall act as and perform the functions and duties of the Office of Attorney General during any period in which the Attorney
Hello?
General...
Lady Master, you were gone for about a few seconds there, so can you go back and start that sentence again?
Yes. In the order listed, shall act as and perform the functions and duties of the Office of Attorney General during any period in which the Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General, the Associate Attorney General, and any officers designated by the Attorney General pursuant, I don't know what this is, but pursuant to 28 U.S.C. 508, to act as Attorney General have died, resigned, or otherwise become unable to perform the functions and duties of the Office of Attorney General until such time as at least one of the officers mentioned above is able to perform the functions and duties of that office.
And what are, name those offices again?
Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General, the Associate Attorney General, and any officers designated by the Attorney General.
Okay, now let me
what's
let me
interesting
say, let me
what's
say
interesting,
this. I'm sorry.
Well, the three that they listed aren't even in D.C. The three that are, you know, supposed to take over in this order is the United States Attorney for Eastern District of Virginia, the District of Minnesota, and the District of Arizona.
Wow.
That's the ABC.
Does that proceed? Is there more? Do they explain that?
Gosh, Rama, can you go on the White House site?
Why don't you send him the link and then he can click on it?
Okay, I'm not that good, Tara. It's whitehouse.gov.
Whitehouse.
Presidential Actions. And then you go down to Presidential Actions.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, it's just so much to share. That goes right along with the fact that Rama just stated that Randy Rhodes said about him, right?
Yes.
Attorney General Eric Holder, and which means that cog in the wheel, as I understand it, will be replaced by Lady Mastrinata, the special lawyer from the World Court of Justice, who has been our republic has been in her hands from the very beginning. And she's the one that's in charge of ordering our backpacks, our backpacks, and a lot more. She's the one to order those to be delivered, and they get delivered after arrests and within 72 hours after the announcement. And what we have been told all along is that full disclosure will envelop the entire process from the arrest, right, Rama?
Mm-hmm.
And you understand why, because there are 20 million total sovereign world militia forces that have been on the ground globally for a long time now. And the King of Swords is in charge of all of that as an operation, and 16 million of these sovereign militia forces are galactic. They're from other time-space continuums. They are members of the Ashtar Command, and they have had their stellar ships here, and they have been beaming in and out, and they have been doing many things. And we've been mentioning names like Larry, Curly, and Moe, absolutely interstellar galactic Ashtar Command members, who also sit in round table with the King and a few other folks at the 38th level above the President. And people like Jesse Ventura, for instance, he shares these round tables with these guys because he is a Navy SEAL Delta Force. And he is a white knight, and his access
I've
to
been
that
watching
realm,
his programs.
Pardon me?
I've been watching Jesse's programs. They're very
yes.
informative.
Very, and yes, we have played some humdingers on this show, everybody.
Yeah.
And there is some more things that are coming up. We're getting ready to go into what you might call a hub of 100% what can I say? A galactic university on one place where this university has many websites and linked together at one place with unlimited bandwidth. We are creating this University of Peace right now, and there may be some learning curves on some of them, yet there's things to link so that as the student seeks and checks other things out, then we come to that galactic and rainbow of the 13 families of the dolphin kingdom of the dolphin constellation, and we're coming into that time on November 30th through December 17th. We will be traveling through the dolphin constellation, and there's another name for it. It's called Ophiuchus. O-P-H-I-U-C-H-U-S. And what is it really? It's the only constellation where there is a real physical man in that constellation with the connecting of the stars. And that man in his right hand is holding the tail of the serpent. And in his left hand, he is holding the head of the serpent. And these are the two poles of polarity, where Mother says, I am the light. I'm the head. And what Mother says about her consort, Alcyone, the great central sun. Androgynous, really, in one central sun with her aspects of being the lady of the black hole of time and space, of the creation chamber of her womb, not needing any kind of physical sperm to create anything, only to be that which is the source of the mind of God that is us. That is the mind of Mana, and that is dolphin energy of the dolphin mind. So where are we going? We're going to the highest levels here. This is galactic healing when we connect the dots and we know that we are divine mind in action right now. That is our true wealth, that golden temple. And we're talking about the temple of our crown and above, where there are nine stars. And again, that was another interesting point. It's been on more than once on Keith tonight. He did it again, where he went to this beautiful structure which has a dome on the top of it. And it's not a mosque, and I forgot, was it Michelle Bachman or somebody thought it was?
Uh-huh.
Or said it was, whether she knew better or not. And then had people demonstrating against,
the mosque in Manhattan.
Right,
yeah, because
it's not a mosque.
Oh.
No, I forgot where it is. It's a multi eclectic Christian
ecumenical.
It's an ecumenical a collection of Christian sects. You might say.
Very cool.
Yes. I mean, we are really, really doing well in terms of, all realities of being able to insert now our galactic brothers and sisters. Okay. Now, Denise.
Yes.
Denise, now, where were we? Tell me what you want. Okay, you were reading to us.
On the White House website. And I would just say.
And you didn't go there, though.
I went there, and what I can say from what
I looked at is that, you know, like Randy Rhoads is leaking, Mr. Eric Holder may be leaving. There may be new attorney general. Maybe it's Patrick Fitzgerald. Nobody's saying. So.
Yeah, and further down there it says that this one revokes the one from December 9th, 2008. And I found that interesting, you know, that it was rewritten so soon within the administration and that it was done before he went, before President Obama went to, on his trip. And I thought, okay, things are moving.
They are moving.
Yeah, and that's another interesting date, December 9th, 2008. Is that what you said?
Yes.
When the first one was written, which was still in the time
of
the Bush administration, yet it was when Barack Obama was already president-elect.
Ah, I didn't think about that. Yeah.
And Barack Obama had already ordered the execution of Hillary, as well as 10,000 banksters.
Love these
and
even more.
And that, yes, and there's, this is not out of a negative emotion at all. What it is it's the idea that people need to understand that every step from that moment on, he was making with divine guidance. And I don't mean maybe. When we talk about the King of Swords as the seventh incarnation of the vibration and initiation of the vibration in his soul matrix, which means that he created that before he decided to choose his mother, his father, and to grow up in the tradition that his parents were in, which so happens to be one of the ones that we call from the Celtic line of the Castilian Spanish, Iberian. Again, remember, they are the original Celts. And that's a very interesting position for Sananda Kumara to ensoul in that tradition in this lifetime. When you saw, if you did, Lawrence O'Donnell have a 2-hour panel here, a round table, about
immigration
and our brothers and sisters, even south of the border on this side of the planet. And then I gotta also say that the Celts came from Egypt.
Yes.
And Egypt has always been here. Not where the British
Gypsies, Egyptians put it together.
And that as I go wandering along the mountain trail, I love to sing and dance and sing. I can't remember all the words. My knapsack on my back on the mountain path.
I was just thinking of the gypsies, the Egyptians, and the compass, the golden compass.
Well,
that saved Lara.
And then today there was also news of there's a place where they're having in the Ural Mountains all these things are going on with the energy there.
Of the shamans.
Of the shamans there, and ceremony too, on the top of those ziggurat-like Hyperborean step pyramids of the Hyperborean civilization. Okay, we have Denise, are you complete with us?
Well, I have just one little anecdotal thing I wanted to share with you. It's
okay.
Very small, but you know those pictures that they draw that have a picture within them? And if you look a certain way at it, you can see the second picture, and then from that point on, you can't see the original picture? I forget what they call those things.
Are you talking about M.C. Escher? he was an artist that was in the 20s, 30s, and he did these really magical kind of pictures.
Yeah. Well, I had that experience with a word. And the word was nowhere in the sentence. But when I came to it, it was now here.
Woo!
And I can't get it out of my head. And I just wanted to kind of share that with you. So
that's the same thing as Nesara Nusara.
This is
and
what?
Then Kanyada, meaning can. Yes, we can. Nada.
Mm-hmm.
Lady Master Justice. Yes, we can. Canada.
And Mr.
And the crown chakra of the bird tribes of the Western Hemisphere of Egypt.
And I just,
literally.
I just wanted to also pass on, Ram Dass has a new book out called Be Love Now. And I talked to him in the last 2-3 weeks, and I would just say...
You went back and said, how about it, dude? Would you believe in ascension now? We went to see him here in Santa Fe. That's all about 1999.
Right.
After the Prophets Conference here. And he was at, what's the name of that place up in Abiquiu?
Ghost Ranch.
Ghost Ranch, which is owned by the artist... a woman.
Georgia O'Keeffe.
Georgia O'Keeffe. And
a wild lady.
Very wild lady. And again, love is art.
That's
boy.
Right.
She was talking about the conceiving now from all of humanity,
and
from nature, mother.
D.H. Lawrence.
I had the opportunity to see her artwork displayed at the National Gallery in D.C.
Yes, and her lover was D.H. Lawrence, who was a magical character here in the 20s, 30s of New Mexico.
And tell more about that.
I can't remember the name of the book. He's written a series of erotic novels for women and for, you know, couples. They've done them on the movie channels. I forget the names, but D.H. Lawrence used to go with Georgia O'Keeffe to the pueblos in New Mexico and do the peyote and talk to the gods. And they never talked about this story. But
is that because you were there that you know about this?
No, I've talked to people here in New Mexico who knew Georgia O'Keeffe. And
like Good Morning, what's it called? Good Morning.
Tell us
Good Morning, Pueblo Elder, right?
Yes.
Who actually, Rama, did peyote with the Pueblos
of
Taos, for 3 days, 72 hours in trance.
Yes.
And then he went up the mountain. He went up to Taos Mountain, which he got permission to go and represent the Emerald Tablets coming back to our divine governance, which means literally invoking Lord Ketumi as a bird tribe being. Yes. And his name as a bird tribe being of Egypt, meaning of the West. His name is Hermes Trice Majestic. And he worked in the West here with Quetzalcoatl, the Nakakumara. We're getting into, okay, now, well, we're not done with Denise. Denise,
I'm done.
Are you done? Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you, sister. Namaste.
Thank you so much. Love
you
all.
You're so welcome. Okay. Lady Master Cheryl, I see you are there, right?
Tara, yes. Rama, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Greetings.
Greetings.
How are you both?
We're great.
Wonderful, wonderful. You were talking about divine mind. And so what I wanted to do is take the opportunity to invite everyone to merge more fully with their divine mind. And do that through the calls that we're doing on Sundays and Mondays.
Okay, will you please give everybody here your phone number again? And I second that, ditto. And Mother said that this is the most important thing we can do, is to do what we do together on these calls. The decrees.
Yeah, we're doing ascension activations. We are busy raising our frequency and raising the frequency of all life on the planet. And I keep getting feedback that the calls are growing stronger and taking people higher and higher and higher. So every Sunday and Monday through the end of the year, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific time. And the call number is area code 213-289-0500. So that's 213-289-0500. The access code is 946-7441. 946-7441 pound. So I'm just excited to be facilitating these calls. We know that our victory is here, and we have set forth probably 40 different intentions, including the full disclosure and the Sara Now announcements and so on. And so we continue to work with our intentions for planetary peace, prosperity, and all the above mentioned. And I'm excited to have everyone on the radio here call in and join us.
I appreciate you so much. Thank you, Cheryl, for your service to all of us.
Well, it's my honor and my privilege. And as I remind everyone that joins us on the call, these calls would not be possible without each one of them and their willingness to serve as well. So thank you all. I love you all.
Indeed. And namaste.
Namaste. Thank you, beloveds. Great call. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Kira. Thank you so much. Okay. What do we want to do here? Yes, wait, let me play Naomi Klein first. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do this. This is
part of the hard news that's going on.
This is Naomi Klein with Laura Flanders. And okay, we'll just start it. Let's see, gotta get this up. Oh, just a minute. Okay, 1 second, everybody.
Well, you've been back into election mode. It would have been nice to see more of that earlier. But, you know, when I first saw the clip about $700 billion to millionaires, I thought he was talking about TARP, because that it was the same amount that they happily handed over to millionaires and billionaires. And that is directly connected to the economic crisis that was created in the public sphere. And, you know, we talked about this at the time. There was a crisis in the banking sector, the financial sector. Rather than solve that crisis, it was moved. It was moved and turned into a budget crisis. You know, obviously, there are many contributors to that budget crisis, but now the bill's coming due. Multiple bills are coming due at the same time, the bills for the wars as well. Just wrong-headed economic policy across the board. Mm-hmm. But now the time has come to pay, and of course, it's the most vulnerable people who are being asked to pay.
And the dialogue hasn't changed from what you just mentioned. You most recently wrote The Nation magazine after the G20 in Toronto and said you felt like you and your city had been mugged. Mm-hmm. The G20 left the the nations of the world with a mandate to do exactly that.
To do exactly that. And it was interesting because the reporting on the G20 was really very silly. It set out this supposed battle between Obama and some of the European Union governments like Germany, and he was set up as the person who didn't want to cut deficits, that he wanted more stimulus. And he does want more stimulus, but it's more complicated than that, because you also, in terms of the way this country is governed, there is the ability to offload the crisis to the states and the municipalities. And that's where the most dramatic cuts are happening. And so the decision not to bail out states is really where the pain gets transferred.
Let's hear from one worker. He's an SEIU worker who was profiled recently on MSNBC. Take a look.
And for a blue-collar person like myself, the supply I have is the money I have that I can spend disposable income, which can create more demand on the system, which can create more jobs. And I don't understand where we've lost track of that when we see wage stagnation as we do see it, and yet we see the CEOs and the upper echelon, the 10 percenters in this country, controlling 90% of the wealth. I believe in a more equitable system where we all, in the words of Paul Wellstone, when we all do better, we all do better. And I'd like to see that kind of belief in America once again.
Just love it when you have workers quoting Paul Wellstone on national television. That's not enough. Naomi, I listened to him and I heard in his voice a lot similar to what you've been hearing when you went down to Mississippi after the BP oil spill disaster. A lot of sense of who's looking out for us. We're up against such tremendous odds. Where are you finding hope in all of this? Because you're famous also for finding some examples of people actually figuring out how to meet their needs in these situations.
I think that the fact that that unemployed people in this country are starting to get organized is a real source of hope, because this is, you know, what is so what's so dangerous about just disposing of huge sectors, just pushing them out of the economy, is that they become invisible. And we don't really have political structures to make the economically disposed of people visible so that we know what's happening. And, you know, I've done a fair amount of research in developing countries in Latin America, and this move towards organizing unions of the unemployed, marches of the unemployed, that was a really decisive factor in Argentina in 2001, 2002, when that country went through a dramatic transformation. And I've really been waiting to see that happen in this country, and now it's starting to happen. I think that's a source of hope. But look, the problem is that there's rage across the board. The right has organized itself very effectively and with frighteningly deep pockets to provide a voice for right-wing, often racist rage. A lot of people on the at the center liberal end of the spectrum spend a lot of time trying to manage rage, and particularly around election time. And there really aren't very many outlets to voice progressive rage, rage at the elite, rage at those millionaires and billionaires. And it's a crisis. The crisis in this country that comes from the fact that there isn't a real left. There are a lot of institutions that pretend to be an independent left and then turn into an arm of the Democratic Party around election time, and election time in this country seems to never end.
So if we just saw a PSA for the One Nation Working Together demonstration taking place October 2nd, but yeah, speech is going to be covering. If you were a speaker there, would you have a quick punch for people?
Well, I think that we have to build that independent left. And it has to be so strong and so powerful and so militant and so radical, and that it becomes irresistible. Because when people speak truth like that, and when they hear that rage, their rage reflected, but in a constructive way, so that it isn't channeled towards the most vulnerable people, but actually going up the ladder as opposed to down the ladder, then that builds a movement. It builds a movement that politicians can't ignore. You can't ignore that constituency because this model isn't working at all. You know, Bill McKibben wrote a fantastic piece thanking the environmental NGOs in Washington for failing so spectacularly in their stated mission of getting any kind of action on climate change, that now we know exactly what doesn't work. And now we should proceed on the basis of knowing exactly what doesn't work. And I think that applies to a lot of different sectors, not just the environment.
A lot of people, to go back to the Friday press conference from the president, a lot of people were hoping to hear at that press conference that he'd made the decision to appoint Elizabeth Warren as the consumer protector on the financial side. Were you disappointed that that announcement wasn't made?
Well, I hope very much that it does happen. Look, this is the person who appointed Larry Summers and Tim Geithner as his chief economic advisors to the most powerful economic positions in the country. So I don't expect him to appoint them before. But I do think that the fact that people are being so insistent on it and pushing back so hard against the smears and misinformation is really important.
Finally, in the New York Times today, there's one story that just shouts out, a shock doctrine. Scientists say a lack of cash is hindering research on the environmental impact of all sorts of things, the spill included, because all the money is tied up in the BP reparations debate.
Well, this is connected to the BP reparations debate. The scientists that aren't getting funding are the scientists that are trying to find the oil that the government claims has disappeared. They claim that 75% of the oil has disappeared. This is absolutely not true. They can't see the oil, but they have no idea what has happened to the oil. And the scientists who have been tracking them, there has been some good science out there from the University of South Florida, David Hollander in particular, went out on a research cruise in August and found that supposedly disappeared oil or some of it, and it's in the water column. It is not degraded. It's in the sediment. And this is what affects the future fisheries down the road, because the way he put it to me when I spoke to him recently is that we have looked so far at this disaster as a top-down disaster, looking at the top of the food chain, the birds, the dolphins, the large fish. And he said, well, what about if it's a bottom-up disaster, meaning if it's in the phytoplankton, if it's in what the fish eat, if it's in the larvae, then the effect of that it's something we won't know now for years. So how do you assess what your reparations are if you have absolutely no idea what the genuine damage is? And it's scandalous that they're not funding that research.
That was Naomi Klein speaking on Brit TV earlier this year, right here on Free Speech TV. And you heard her. We need in this country to build an irresistible left. And to build an irresistible left, we need media that gives voice to the voiceless, to the invisible, those who are being shunted aside. You can help build that movement, that left that Naomi is talking about, by making a phone call right now. That's all it takes.
Okay, now that's for them at Free Speech TV. And I'm just going to insert, please go to BBS Radio Station 2 and then get to the place where there's a request for a PayPal. You go to the scheduled, the scheduled program at Station 2 that we have, which is tonight is
Galactic Healing.
Galactic Healing Call. And then you scroll down from there after you click on that and find the PayPal button. And please be generous, people. We want to demonstrate the collective sensibility of being able to engage in conversation across all borders and penetrate super consciousness on a communication, free communication level. And we were talking about this earlier, that there's a site where we're not going to say it all tonight, but we are going to play something from that site that we found there. And then Lady Master, I mean, what you want to do and say about where you are, Lady Master, Jill Bachman, if you wish as you wish, please go ahead and call up and let's have those numbers again, 530-413-4511-4515-4520. And Rama,
Helen from Georgia on line A1. Sorry it's taken so long.
Greetings and thank you, Other Lady Vestas.
Am I being heard? Am I okay?
You're fine.
You're great.
Oh, okay. Well, I wanted to give a boot credit to Cheryl's calls because now I think I go so far out I can't hardly hear. I have to fight to listen to the calls, and I don't know if that's what it is, but that's what I'm picking up.
And, you're learning to travel multidimensionality, and so sometimes your experience when you're learning that, you ask and your body responds as you relax into what's going on there and you unify yourself and you remember, you may not remember immediately, it's all going in there, you're totally connected like you're, okay, this energy that's coming through what we call the Mahdi, when we expand to understanding that Mahdi energy, we're going to triplicity colors. And the first color we're talking about is the platinum ray.
I knew you were going to say that.
That's right, which is a triplicity exact mathematical numerical code for creating that pure color.
God is a number.
That means the rose, the spectrum of the blue, pink, and rose of those threefold flame singularity, out of which comes duality in terms of, you might say, a combination thereof. The next color would be combining of the primary, blue and yellow, so that the experience of Archangel Michael's sword of truth would be in your hand first. And then second, you would have the pink, which is Lord Shamuel, and I believe Lord Lanto. And then you have the golden sunshine third chakra, solar plexus power center, creative force of the wisdom, because at that point you combine first of all the electric blue flame of the sword of knowledge of the truth. That's what we've been doing here forever. It's archived and anyone can get access to those things for free at BBS Radio. That's another thing, Station 2. And it would really be cool to just, you know, even be able to take this, and I would say that you could take these things to other places on this universal mandala, or put a link to these things, and that's what's being done already. It's not quite 100% ready to go, but we're just saying everybody's got to be on the board. There's no, let's say, no child left behind for you, and that it would be our responsibility, our ability to respond with the money representing the true wealth, which is the knowledge of the truth, and the ability to activate the knowledge of that truth with that color pink, which is love. It's the color of the rosy pink quartz, and it's the heart chakra, physical heart chakra activator of that kind of love that, where we call each other sister and brother. It's the Essene way. E-S-S-E-N-E. The Essene way has to do with Turtle Island, which has to do with the original story of
Ancient Mu. I forgot to put this microphone up. I bet this makes a difference, doesn't it, everybody?
Yeah.
Let me. Okay, I'm sorry we sounded so far away. I'm staying abreast. Just note on me, nudge me. Okay, so.
I get far away too when I, you know, get into these things. So I know what you're saying.
Okay, now I just wanted to look at this. The Continent of Mu. A map of the lost continent published by the Lemurian Fellowship corresponds nearly exactly to the boundaries of the Pacific Plate. This map appeared long before geologists even knew of the plate's existence. Their detailed map places the capital just north of present-day Maui. Near the center of a vast continent stretching from Australia to the Rocky Mountains here in the United States of Arizona, New Mexico, and portions of Nevada and Utah. This is enormously revealing to who we really are here in the presence here. Now, they're talking about that island of the Continent of Mu. That's what they're talking about. And these were 40,000-foot mountains above sea level, just north of Maui. There's this beautiful mountain waterfall and valley. It's called Ea Valley, which is on the north mound of Maui. And
Steven Spielberg went to visit.
Say that loud.
Steven Spielberg went to visit that particular area. I remember a story about that.
And it's the land of Lord Maui. And Lord Maui is androgynous, is androgyny personified. That's the vibration of 19.5 degrees we're talking about. It also has to do with the vortex of Haleakala, House of the Rising Sun.
Kali Durga.
Which is also, what's her name?
Kuan Yin.
Okay, well, there's also... You go,
Pele.
Yes, that's connected to the Big Island.
Yes,
which
Pele is a goddess that
is mother of the West.
That's right.
Of the ancient land.
Of the Kahunas, the Shark Island people. And the stories about the Shark Island people are true. In the sense, this ties in with the water spirits of the oceans, the undines, and the undines represent servants of Neptune and his twin flame. And there's a story about this. I mean, although they twisted the story, it was called Waterworld with Kevin Costner, where he had to save the world with this child, and, you know, it wasn't that pretty, but we're not going there. I'm just saying that the merman, the mermaids, all of these stories are real.
And they still are here, and they have been helping with the transformation of all of that which has been seriously causing harm in Earth Mother. And we're being called to attention of how much we need help, because those plastic spirals that have been on the vortex of our waters of all the seven seas have been, you know,
islands of plastic
that are where the source of the oxidation process is going on. Yet this light in the Urals is coming from the great, coming from the connection of the great central sun, El Sion, the all-seeing eye of the one God, meaning divine activity. And that's where the sanctuary of the I Am University sits, which is another one of the places at this location. Yet we'll continue on. We're doing something right now where it's collectively time to have a university on this table of ours that's already laid down. And yes, Rama?
Oh, I was just saying, we should go into the right brain and play some music or something.
Well, Helen. Helen? Did you go away?
No, I'm here.
Yes, do you? Where
can you hear me?
Oh, very well. Very well. Okay. Loud and okay. I was just asking you. There's an echo there. You want to turn that down just a little bit? Just a tiny bit. Speak again in a different way into your phone. There's just a bit of a static there.
Is this better?
Yes, that's much better.
Okay.
Much better. Okay, go ahead.
I have a couple more comments to make.
Okay.
And one is the song Valdera, my knapsack on my back.
Yeah.
You know, the song you sang. Well, when you said that, I pictured the Fool in the tarot cards, with that song.
Guess what else? What is his partnership with? It's with a little white dog.
That's
and
right.
I want to tell you something real special about that little white dog. That little white dog has a five-pointed star right on his third eye. And he's a very special white dog that the Hopi elders recognize as the sign of the time when the Fool is here. And Mother is the divine source of 0 point in us together collectively at 0 point, which is divine neutrality and divine praise, respect, thanks and love for the light and the dark coming to the table of divine compassion, divine wisdom, and divine justice and beauty in their caps. In those responsible who have the next step to take. And we need this encouragement of all of us now to continue to push in a good sense. I think I'm going to just put this out here for one more thing she was going to say here, because I think, let me just do this and go back here for a minute.
378-8669 or pledge online at freespeech.org. 877-378-8669 or pledge online at freespeech.org. This is your moment. This is the opportunity for you to make the difference by making the phone call. Power people, power media. Play your role. 877-378-8669. We will make a pledge to you that if you support us, we'll keep bringing programming like Grit TV to you every day, week in, week out, month in, month out.
Okay, I thought there was something else she was going to comment that I'm going to have a little trouble finding it right now. I'm sorry I didn't. But this is the thing, that the audience now and the support of these things and then connecting them all around the world on top of it has created a network of really balanced, because the ethics, remember that. Oh, and that's another thing. This Friday on the Rachel Meadows show, she's going to rebroadcast her discussion with
John Stewart.
John Stewart.
Of
The Daily Show.
Of The Daily Show.
Jon Stewart got pretty, he was serious as a heart attack in this interview, and there's been a lot of cussing and discussion about this story of what Jon Stewart said to Rachel concerning the Tea Party and the whole story going on. And it's like Bernie Sanders has said, this is the new face of our friends on the right, and it's not a pretty face because racial issues is the issue. And Amy Goodman brought it up today about the man who was killed during the civil rights era concerning what has happened at this moment where this man is bringing up a black man of the Aboriginal Moabite Nation that has to do with freedom. And these folks who represent Mr. Mitch McConnell and John Boehner do not want this to be told to the people that Mr. Obama has done everything according to the plan that will bring full disclosure, first contact. This is what Richard Hoagland talked about in the hyperdimensional election, and I have to go back to that because it's a bigger story where it's on a grander scale. 2012 is not the end. It is just the beginning of the story. We're not even in 2012 anymore. Moving into 2013, as it has been said by Grand Goddess Lily, and I will just say that this has to do...
Well, it has to do with three in one, you might say, because there are three waves, three major
right.
waves of ascension. And those who were ready were initiated on the first wave of time, coming to the end of the calendar, which was 2004, August 8th, on 8-8 Lionsgate, 2004. Which was a period that we were initiated in then on that Lionsgate, which is the opening. It actually begins around the 23rd or 22nd of July, and it goes through a whole series of days, and it arrives on 888 Lionsgate, which indicates the Kalki energy coming back and actually blanketing the planet and all the portals again. That's cosmic consciousness in a unity way where we can actually handle it. And it's so much love that it lifts us up. We could play that song, Love Lift Us Up. You want to play that?
Oh, sure.
You want to do that? That would be good.
Yeah.
Okay, Lady Master, before we go there, now, where were we with you?
One more comment to make. And
yeah.
That it is really ironic that the United States of America began with a black Moroccan from Africa and ends with a black president who has lived also in Africa. I thought that was really ironic.
Well, let me throw another one in for you, because this is a monkey wrench in that story, because I'll tell you what I learned from Lord Jamal a number of weeks ago, or was that the last week? Yes. Besides the fact that we are going to really get used to understanding that the ancient Mayan return, the ancient ones that we are all from, that ancient city of gold. And you want to talk about that again? That ancient?
The city of Cibola.
El Dorado.
The seven cities of Cibola or El Dorado in Santa Fe, New Mexico represents the seven city of El Dorado. As well as also the other areas that go all the way down into South America, leading to the plains of Nazca and the gate of Tiahuanaco, where you go to the Monastery of the Seven Rays of Lord Aramu Muru and Lady Master Muru. And the stories about this, the Seven Cities of Gold, it is brought up in the movie. We watched it recently again. National Treasure, Book of Secrets. And, I mean, that movie was such a scene dealing with the story where it is about the cities of gold that are still, to this day, they represent cities just like that Mayan city off the coast of New Orleans where BP, to this day, like you heard Naomi Klein say in that past interview, this is about BP and greed and Dick Cheney, Halliburton, Bechtel, I can go on, Transocean, foreign corporations who have bought and sold our Congress. And there, it's now up to 20 lobbyists for every senator and congressman who are pulling at their coattails. Here's $5,000. Here's $10,000. Here's $500,000. Come with me and I'll show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. And it's not funny because murder is the name of the game.
Yes.
And it's...
Yet they have been able to move at quite a rapid pace here in terms of informing people of numerous characters that justice is being served to, not the least of which, did you ever hear the results of today's sentencing day as we thought?
For Tom DeLay, I do not know.
We only know that there was a comment from that coroner that he would be sentenced to life.
Yes.
And so we're just...
I have to confirm.
Yeah. Nonetheless, that...
I would also assume that these folks would be talking about it, too. You know, Keith and Rachel and Lawrence O'Donnell, as this is major news, because it ties in with Jack Abramoff and Randy Duke Cunningham, and still... This goes all the way to the boys in Sicily, and I won't call them boys, men. It is about how the Vatican is going down, where they lied to us about the chair of Peter and the story about the admiral, which is Sunanda Kamara.
And what does he have to do with the chair of Peter?
The office of the Christ is not in Rome. It is at 26 degrees Sagittarius. And I cast the talking stick.
Well, now that you say all that, this is so awesome, everyone. What we're going through right now is just beyond awesome. We're connecting the dots. Let me just connect another dot, one more before we... What do you want to play? Up Where We Belong. Oh, let's do that. Let's play that. I sang that song at a wedding of a whole bunch of people. Yes. Okay, let's go.
Thank you.
Long time ago in a land not so far away from this time period, we have another. Oh, okay. Can you see there?
Mary Ann from Texas on line D1.
Greetings, sister. Greetings. Yes.
Greetings. Hi. I've got some information about the Tom DeLay trial. Actually, they're in their third week. They haven't... they're not finished yet. The prosecutor actually rests today, their case, and then the defense will probably rest on Thursday. But he's facing charges of money laundering and conspiracy to commit money laundering. And he actually, as you said last night, could face up to a life in prison. So, but DeLay's political action committee is... I guess his own, PAC, it illegally channeled corporate donations through the arm of the, Washington-based Republican National Committee. So, and then they wrote a check to the 7 Texas House candidates. So basically it was, they say it's money laundering and he says it's money swapping. So, in Texas, we have a law that you can't accept corporate donations. So, there you go.
Say that again?
So, in Texas, we have a law you can't accept corporate donations for House candidates here.
For campaigning, they cannot accept corporate donations.
Yeah, ooh, that's outrageous. That's really outrageous in that backyard once upon a time still living there, President Bush, eh?
No, that's, yeah. And it's been pretty busy here in Texas. George Bush was here last week and selling his book, and he only sold 5,000 copies in Austin. And he was on the front page of the Dallas Morning News along with Condoleezza Rice, Laura Bush, and Dick Cheney for the part of start of his presidential library at Southern Methodist University in Dallas. And it was a shock to see them all on the front page of the Dallas Morning News. And basically they were...
Say who they were again. George Bush, Dick Cheney.
Laura Bush and Condoleezza Rice. It was very shocking to see them all together.
How did they look in their faces? Were they grinning or were they not grinning?
No, they were shoveling dirt because they were starting the library. So,
Groundbreaking,
yes. So they had shovels in their hand, and it was quite interesting. So, something else with Governor Perry here. He also has a book coming out, Fed Up, and he won by 16 points, and he declined his debates, and he wasn't backed by the newspapers here, and he didn't win the large cities. He didn't win Austin, he didn't win Houston, he didn't win Dallas or San Antonio. And anyways, what I also heard was, and this is not going to happen, but I have a friend who's a former employee at the Texas Capitol, and Perry wants to run with Palin in 2012, which is not going to happen, though. So,
no way, Jose.
That's the news down here, and
Lady Master, would you keep us posted now, because you know, I think you're going to get it in your news right first, I think.
It's hitting daily. Yes.
This is really big because did you tell everybody about what Randy Rhodes said today?
Yeah.
Repeat that again, just so it gets in our...
Randy Rhodes told the story today about the, TSA agents who are groping people at the airport and...
Oh, yeah.
Let's just say that a man requested Mike Papantonio's services as a lawyer, and Mike Papantonio brought it up today, again, with Randy Rhodes. This goes back to 9/11, the morning George Bush read My Pet Goat. Nobody had to take their shoes off at the airport, let alone go through body scans.
Until 9/12, right?
Until the day after.
9/12, 2001.
And all of this.
And right now they're doing something where this man, he broke the policeman's hand, whatever, the representative, what's that called, TSA?
The TSA agent, this man, you know.
Transportation Security Agency.
I guess.
Something close.
But it is about the fact that posse comitatus, habeas corpus, and our rights are being taken away.
They haven't come back either.
No, they haven't. Patriot Act 1, 2, and 3, and, you know, by the office of the Christ, and Lord Michael is protecting this whole story. And this is where the Syrian commander comes in as the ninth member of the Council of Nine from the Blue Lodge of Sirius.
That goes back to the little white dog. That little white dog is a
is a Hopi dog that the Hopi shaman knows all about.
Right.
And the Hopi shaman is the shaman that is a master of the Emerald Tablets of Thoth.
Ketumi.
Ketumi. Tehuti is another name for this being. And in the west, again, of the bird tribe, that's what this is about. And with the knowledge of that golden sunlight, cosmic, and that they're talking about, you might say, us really glowing with a golden light.
The nimbus or the halo that you see in all the religious paintings.
And then in that start of that hue of that golden light, you see that which we saw, which has the aura of the pink rose and the aura of the Excalibur sword of truth.
The platinum.
Electric blue.
Sapphire
blue. These colors are just so amazing in terms of that scale of divine emotion flowing through the activity of, first of all, one type of places where we would first of all go to what we talk about, this representation of mother's womb, which is the creation chamber substance of a black hole, which is that place of one hand clapping in the void.
Be love now.
What's that?
Be love now.
Be here now, be love now. Nowhere, everywhere, and nowhere, now, here. At once. That's what Mother says. I am the light and the dark, Mother. I am everywhere and nowhere at once. We're everywhere and now here at once is where we merge those activities with receiving first and then giving in a balance, which is in that golden sunshine yellow monad at our eighth chakra or our first star of nine above our crown. And that is where we are world bridgers, and we're talking about multidimensional world bridgers of that which we call the energy now of Sananda Kumara, merged with Ascended Master Jesus the Christ, as it's talked about in the I Am Sanctuary teachings of Saint Germain. And in that I Am University dot or university, we're talking about divine wisdom, literally, at that place. It's the book of knowledge itself. It's the
Gnosis.
The Gnosis, G-N-O-S-I-S, which is located in our higher Buddhic mind.
Just type in the hypothalamus pituitary pineal gland.
Where the fool must be in order to know that which is true about as I leap. And we're leaping quantumly. I know I can fly on the wings of an eagle. That eagle is my spirit light. And that crown chakra has another bird, which is the thunder bird. And I wanted to read something. This would be a good time, and then we can play another song, right, Rama? Let's read this. The Legend of the Eagle and the Condor. This prophecy has foretold how we all come together and unite as one. The coming together of the condor and the eagle, of them dancing together and the soaring together, is a very old one and It is shared in one way or another by many cultures around Earth Mother. The beginning of the liberation of the Indian people would be symbolized by different prophecies, one of which is the union of the tears of the condor of, I have to get my magnifying glass. Sorry everybody, I just have to look here. Forgive me. Okay. Let me read that sentence again. The beginning of the liberation of the Indian people would be symbolized by different prophecies, one of which is the union of the tears of the condor of Urin, U-R-I-N, and the eagle of Hanan, H-A-N-A-N. The union of these tears would cauterize our wounds and fortify our spirit, body, and thought. The Great Spirit would open furrows, and in each furrow would water its seed, and in each step would spring battalions of men who would bare their chests to fend off the daggers of the enemy. They would reach out with their hands to erase oppression, exploitation, and injustice. And they would write on the huge page of the sky the sacred word of liberty. The union of the condor and the eagle, according to the prophecy, should occur at this time. The ensuing time period will be born with a new spirit. This new spirit will unite once again the red nations of north, central, and south parts of the hemisphere. It is important to understand the interpretation of the prophecy in order to understand the purpose and scope of the peace and dignity journeys, all capital letters, capital P, capital D, capital J, of the peace and dignity journeys mandate, which the intercontinental run is a part. There are many steps that will and are being taken by our peoples at this time. The peace and dignity runs are some of these steps. All steps are part of the vision, dream, and prayer. Capital V, capital D, capital P. Vision, dreams, and prayer that we are making to carry out the instructions of our ancestors, and to fulfill the prophecy by active participation in these steps. This is the prayer of peace and dignity that the Eagle and the Condor Confederation be reestablished again. We're talking about now, Rama. Come here. You got to come here right now. Come on. No, now. Come on. Okay. Okay, he's here. I'm going to read this again, and then you respond in terms of what Ashtar has to say about this statement. All steps are part of the vision, dreams, and prayer that we are making to carry out the instructions of our ancestors and to fulfill the prophecy by active participation in these steps. This is the prayer of peace and dignity that the eagle, which is number one in the medicine wheel, which is that Archangel Michael again, and the eagle in one spot, meaning the seat of power represented by that eagle in Washington, D.C. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then we're talking about the condor. The eagle and the condor confederation be reestablished again. Now, there's something that's called the activation of us as the 33rd planet to enter into something called
the Confederation of Worlds.
Okay, now tell everybody what that really means and what that means in terms of what we are in for together as all the seven hues of the rainbow coming together and making
as
work.
We join this the Confederation of Worlds, which also encompasses the Confederation of Light or Federation of Light. All of this ties in with the stories that go to the highest levels, where I said it again, 26 degrees Sagittarius is where this all is connected. All of this has to do with that galactic center that's lining up the dark rift where Mother's Yanni, to put it quite bluntly, and that is the story of what is going on here as we go through not the end of the Mayan calendar, but the beginning. And it is Sat Yuga already. This is what we are experiencing as it shifts from a story of war to one of peace. And we are bringing in the understanding here as a global village that we are all one people, that this song talks about Barack Obama, Michael Fronte, yes, we can. We are all one people called divine humanity. As we do this as a global village, we become the 33rd member of the Confederation of Worlds. And for hypothetical purposes, call it Starfleet. And what I am saying is within the Federation, we figure out with the help of our galactic brothers and sisters a way where it's already happening. There is no need for hunger or death or disease or war. There are systems of civilization that have never seen war. Ever. It is an inconceivable concept to their civilization. And they have been here millions and trillions of years. And let's say they come as a flash of light and then they're gone. They have achieved what is also that place where the Elohim tried to go as they thought they could become masters of the universe, and Skeletor never won. It is that story about where we are all one. This is how we become the 33rd member of the Confederation of Worlds. Right now, it is at this place, this man is doing everything in his power to tell the truth and get it done. And the ones that he surrounded himself with, which represents these folks who are only in it for the greed. And as Michael Moore has talked about quite recently, Wendell Potter's bringing it up, that we still are not there about free health care. And this is what is about to happen as we have our announcements and full disclosure first contact that leads us into global understanding. We can move into universal economics, as Mother calls it, where as you have a mission with what you need to do, like the Venus Project, Jacques Fresco, it is created through the Federation. Everything you need, all the ships, all the equipment, all the bakshish, whatever it takes one day or one millennium. That is the place where in which right now is being made manifest so that we never ever have to experience a lack of any concept. It is not in that place in the higher dimensions as we are being taught by we are the ones we have been waiting for as the wisdom is being shared across the planet as we wake up to our higher selves right now. And our higher selves are kicking us in the butt saying, here is the way, you know, this is the way, this is the life. It's not I am.
Okay, do you want to do this one with the shaman first?
Yeah.
on the internet, Rama? And our, maybe we should play one song before we go on to the next thing, because maybe I'll just read this one other thing before we go on, because I wanted to point out that this is now in the West, Egypt, numero uno, and Ouachita, numero uno, in one focus of the land of the eagle. And so that's why I'm going to read this piece, that we just have to look at that, because that's where we are. We're on North Amexum as well. And the people of that native tradition, we're going to see some Mayan, a real, we're going to go do that too, really, right after. Not that one, Rama, not that one.
No.
Okay. All right, so here I go. It's a brief commentary by Reverend Condi Conte Paasiwi. The Ouachita are the black mound builders of this landmass known as, here it's got, it's spelled A-M-E-R-I-K-A, where the Ka is invoked of the Shark Island people. Which is back to what we were speaking of about the kahuna spirit, which is also, we've got to be careful, because you might say, you know, there was a little disagreement going on in the ancient land of Mu, of our beautiful Hawaii remnant of thereof. And I'll just say that the Ka, or the Shark Island consciousness, is about our divine spark of our gateway, you might say, which is where that fontanel is again in the biology of the body, where we collectively take ourselves as that, fool, divine fool, where we know that we don't turn into a maniac when we could collect our divine neutrality and step off the cliff of 3D and onto the rainbow bridge, which Swami Purna talked about, and of which we also understand that Sananda Kumara said, I come as a rainbow. And now we were back to this I am university consciousness of unity consciousness again, where the ascended master of the I am Saint Germain sanctuary teaching of ascended master Jesus the Christ has now
ascended in that office of the Christ to the office of the cosmic Christ as co, directors, of this cosmic energy, of Maitreya or the Kalki. That means there's just everything's here, and surrender would be that pure surrender, that highest form of love being, praise and praising the moment of surrender in everything given as we stay with our heart open and willing to continue to receive as needed and without interruption flow in that infinity cycle of our golden sun energy. Okay, so here we go again. The Washita are the black mound builders of this landmass known as the Mary Ka. Today, the Washita lands are outlined and documented to be the illegal Louisiana Purchase. As is usual for Emery Ka, the land of the Washita were stolen and claimed as the illegal Louisiana Purchase. This also has to do with some actions regarding Bill Clinton. When he disbarred himself and basically did step into the role of a constitutional law smith, as in like Michael Ratner and Amy Goodman's brother, David Goodman, and who else is one of those? Constitutional law smiths of the Center for
Constitutional Rights.
And the constituency of the signees of the original Declaration of Independence was that of what we call in our founding fathers their principles of deism. Now what this is talking about is the Kalki again. They're talking about not atheism, although that allowance for all people of all propensities, including that, to come together and to take an embodiment of the one that is our divine template of our golden sun consciousness, unity consciousness, and do this in service and dedication. And this is what we do. We do divine alchemy by creating this divine new dispensation and the knowledge partnership, the divine alchemy of seven, which if you put sevens into three places, you have our seven steps to heaven. You can talk about it that way too. Or you can talk about Jacob's ladder. Or you can talk about the different evolutionary steps of our consciousness to this superconscious rainbow bridge merger between our individual monads and our collective golden sunshine, you might say solar disk connection. Within that quantum leap state of fifth dimensional consciousness, which then we can go right outside of Santa Fe here, to La Cienega, to 69 acres of something called Sunrise Spring, where there's an actual spring of water that flows as a stream on that land, where that ancient Mayan returned Lemurian sun disk of the land of the eagle and the condor merged is there in the fifth dimension, 10 stories tall, and pure etheric gold, which is that cosmic dust, monoatomic in nature, which is what we're talking about in the Golden Compass again. And coming from where? Coming from the pole star, located in the Little Bear, as Mother Russia's Little Bear, as of the North Pole, as of the Hyperborean origins of that North Pole, back at the time of Hyperborea. How long ago was that? Was in the time of the very early beginnings of, I mean, didn't it start in the land of Mu? There was.
This is, brings in the story of the shaman, the Siberian shamans.
This material has brought us to an awesome revisiting of our evolutionary steps, that tribal consciousness in its first step can be done civilly in the way of the path of the spiritual warrior, of the same emerald path which came from Atlantis, combined with our rainbow bridge to our galactic confederation of worlds connection, unbroken, which is talking about our ability to remember and travel backwards and forwards in time without any trouble, and to keep your head in the clouds and your feet on the ground as we do so. And that's why we are connecting now the bird tribe, emerald tablets of now Thoth, and then Hermes tribes Majestic, and also that body of that golden sun knowledge of Mercury and Heru. We're getting to understand that's all part of the bird tribe level of the golden renaissance period of the age of the seventh age of and final age of Aquarius, whereby we now have become not only all 12 strands of DNA returned to and capable of doing that together by us agreeing at that round table to do the diplomatic coming together of all the rays of every rainbow and its subtler hues. Meaning there's the law of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All good children go to heaven. And then we can go on again. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 days of Christmas for our 12 days from the 25th, as that's the third day of the 72-hour period from winter solstice, which when we only had spring and summer delineations in our seasons, what we were talking about in the house of the rising sun is another piece we just described at 19.5 degrees, cosmic unity conscious vibration that is located not only in Hawaii, and in varying degrees around it, surrounding it, in all of those Hawaiian peaks of the land of Mu principles. And then we come back to this
mound builder. Yes. Okay. Now let me just finish this a little bit. I see we've got some callers. The USA has hidden this fact effectively, and most African / Washita born, now we have the Aboriginal Moabite Nation to enjoin ourselves with and file the UCC one. Still and yet, everybody. Still and yet, everybody. Do that with a very important warning that this is not out of fear, it's out of anchoring in consciousness in the landmass of planetary citizenry and galactic citizenry and intergalactic citizenry as the 33rd planet to enjoin with the Confederation of Worlds. And that means to master too. Okay, well, we'll finish the rest after we have Bill from California. You are on line A1. Hello, Commander.
Hello, Tara and Rama. I have a question for you.
Yes.
With what happened with Charlie Rangel and also with the trying to cut out the or stop the treaty with Russia on nuclear weapons and all of that stuff going on, isn't it time for Nisara to be announced and put an end to that? And then between tomorrow and, the 30th of November, how likely is that about to happen?
Okay, let me go back to the beginning of your question. You were saying, isn't it about time? And it's not only about time, it's not a singular day. It's an enactment process, and the first part of the process has begun with the G20 for sure, and even, I will say before that, the journey, the trip that Barack Obama made, the first thing he did at the hotel there, the Taj Hotel, which is at the Taj Mahal, 800 room, fully booked and secured, with 3,000 people in the entourage, with how many along with Air Force One, there were aircraft from what?
34 warships.
34 warships and something in the air too, right?
Mm-hmm.
What were those?
Apache helicopters, and I'm not sure what else.
It's
our galactic friends, among other things.
Exactly. The galactic ones had their beam on the whole entourage, and anything that was not in alignment with Saint Germain, who was in attendance with Barack and those who sat on that round table in India at that Taj, and there was an agreement that was made between the galactics and leaders, 3,000 leaders from all over the world. And representation, for sure, Dalai Lama was there, possibly Sai Baba. I would not say no to that.
I don't know.
I don't know, but
no one's told me who was in attendance.
Okay, well, maybe you can pursue a little more of that. Because there were, wasn't Astro there?
Say possible.
And who else? Sanat Kumara, perchance?
Don't know. Yet I would say that as that is within the vicinity of the Taj Mahal, which was built by
Kutumi.
Yes. Shah Jahan.
Yes, who was the grandson
of Akbar the Great.
The lifetime of our Syrian commander, as Ashtar spoke of Barack Obama, who has, again, Ashtar said, done everything exactly, followed everything exactly as Saint Germain has called for, and sat there again with Saint Germain in that round table. It's really true.
What I would say concerning all of these issues has to do with how he created 50,000 more jobs by talking with the folks in India. That's just the surface. It is about the healing of the world.
Although, you know, Tom Hartman and all these other people say 50,000 of our jobs.
That's right.
Which was feeling a little froggy about that, yet there's something else about that that's shifting now. Too.
And I heard rumors or stories that
has to do with new technology.
When all was said and done, he brought back $15 billion worth of stories in terms of reality.
Who did?
Barack Obama, in terms of the deals that were made with the G20, in terms of helping the people of the USA.
In other words, there were only five of these leaders at the G20 meeting that did not comply. And
to this day, I know not who they are.
No, except that what occurred is that the energy of the violet flame emitting from Saint Germain's hand, and that's the energy of divine alchemy, whereas as the heart is shut down, that makes it excruciatingly painful. And when the violet flame is Bill, did you get lost? Commander Bill? What, okay, I just want to know what happened. Seth, can you just let us know? Was that a voluntary leaving or?
No, that was some kind of a noise.
It was a busy signal. It was a busy signal. You're back. So there you are, Commander.
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay, go ahead. I just wanted to ask you, are you satisfied with what we've been talking about? Is there more that you want to explore here?
Well, we're certainly not getting that from the mainstream media. That's for sure.
No, you're not.
They were saying that he came back empty-handed and he was totally rebuffed by the countries.
Yes, you understand that something else is going on from what we're getting here. We don't just get a call every day from Prince Harry. And Prince Harry knows all about it.
This is why Lady Di knows all
about the dossier accounts
for all
right.
78 programs.
Which are the Nasara program documents.
Right.
With all the gold certificates, they're all in the proper order, and the new banking system and all of its new software and hardware are all there. Everybody trained, every rainbow bill, everywhere it belongs. this is happening with absolute precision. And when we hear since Monday, we hear full disclosure is possible anytime. It could even initiate itself this week, which means disclosure of galactic presence. That doesn't necessarily mean we're going to get the announcement of them this week. What's being activated, though, are things that will come into especially places like literally where they haven't been so much before. What we are seeing is where they're on, like you said, they're on public radio too, that little ad where it comes from the planetarium kind of report of the astronomy?
Earth and Sky.
Earthandsky.com, is that right?
I think it's earthandsky.com where they give taped reports about different environmental and astronomical issues that are going on. They play it on NPR and PRI across the planet in various locations. And it's tied in with another show that's on NPR called The World. And it's played on, you know, NPR. I'm not sure. It comes on after All Things Considered.
Okay, Rama, we better go forward. I don't know. Okay, Bill, are we okay now?
Yeah, we're good. And I sure thank you for your help there.
Okay, do you understand that we have Prince Harry announcing to Rama on the phone that he and his brother are going to the courthouse in, I believe that we're talking about Mohammed Al-Fayed's courthouse in France.
Wow.
Unless there are another one opened now right there in London. I don't know, but you know, it's about testifying against his own father, both he and his brother, their own father, Prince Philip, right alongside with Gordon Brown, right alongside with Tony Blair, right alongside with the Queen of England. Prince Charles, what did I say?
Prince Philip.
Sorry, please forgive me. Yeah. Prince Charles.
Philip, yeah.
Jeez. And this
is another ancient one that is on his way to The Hague for war crimes.
All of them are. All these ones we're talking about. And we must remember, even though that's not been on the main media, they'll explain it when everybody can take what they need and accept what has happened already before they get to that. Which is what? That the Queen of England visited and spoke and two sites, and only one site was reported, and that was at Ground Zero, not the other one, which was at the United Nations where she officially resigned. It was up there in the first week of August of this year, and that means she resigned, and at the same moment, Our Princess Di became the acting Queen of England. So when we get a call from Prince Harry, her son who knows, and as well as his brother who has just announced he's betrothed to his love all along, who is not of his bloodline. And there was something said about that. In other words, she is, her parents are multimillionaires, so she has the privileges that somebody with money in education and all of that could have, and protocols and all of that. I don't mean to say it. It's without the rest of it, it's a problemo, you know, to keep everybody in line. But at the same time, they are, you might say, of what they, meaning Lady Di, as well as Katie Middleton, is that her name?
Kate Middleton.
Catherine, I don't know. Well, I think you said Kate. K-A-T-E. They were spoken of as commoners, when in truth, Prince Harry and Prince William are the true bloodline, and the Queen of England is the commoner. And
she was coronated on a fake stone of scone.
And we're talking about the energies of the cathedral. cathedrals and all the mandalas and stained glass and domes and everything that are built in, and the Gothic and the structures, all these things are geometrical you might say, built to the highest Rosicrucian teaching. As we understand, then, again, Sir Francis Bacon, Saint Germain, same being, was known as the Rosicrucian, which is the teachings of true Christianity at its highest state, which is one with the teachings of the Sufi. At its highest state, which is one with the teachings of all shaman energy. That's the true teaching. So I think we'll take a break here. Oh no, I didn't finish this. Let's finish this. Now let's go back to this. Are you okay now, Bill? Did he say he was? Okay. Everybody, okay, so let's go finish this. Okay.
And Saint Germain.
I'm sorry, we just heard you come in. You must have been talking.
Oh.
Can you say again?
Do they have protection of King of Swords and all of his people to prevent anything happening to Prince Harry and Prince William?
Yes,
they do.
It is galactic in nature. And remember that the King of Swords is in charge of a world sovereign militia force, of which three quarters of it are, that means 16 million of these sweet people are not from Earth. They are from different time spaces continuums in our galaxy and other galaxies, starting here with the Milky Way galaxy and then the one that's exactly opposite us and so much more vast than our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, that you can't describe it by trillions of light years of beings and civilizations in Andromeda. And, King Pharaoh, Aya, A-Y, of the father of Nefertiti. Nefertiti being one in the same bloodline of the time of the first Renaissance, you know, the first golden age there of the fifth kind, of the fifth root race of the time of Egypt and Atlantis, that period crossed over, and, I mean, we go all the way back to the first root race, and that's again back in our evolution where things like war were going on. I'm not kidding, and oh boy. And especially when we ended up retrograding in terms of what we did in Atlantis, which was the highest period of fifth dimensional peace and love, civilized activities. Isis and Osiris and all those teachings intact on that. Again, Saint Germain, seventh root race, as well as dolphin consciousness, which is the higher octave of divine alchemy combined with our pink and gold of our monad merged together on the eighth ray. And that's Lord Maitreya, the Kalki in us, which is that which we have at the 10th incarnation and initiation of a lifetime and of the initiation of the ray of that lifetime of Kalki Maitreya, which is where we function from the non-linear realms of the fifth dimension, which is in our aura. And that's where the energy of shaman comes through, all of our shaman light activated. And so we have even visualized this, the amethyst fleets of Saint Germain. They are that color, amethyst. And they have rims of gold around them, which is that rim of that golden knowledge. And everything is in a hue of that beautiful pink rose. Okay, now let's go to this piece. Rama, what are you going to play? That one about the shaman. What mm-hmm. is a shaman? Okay, here we go. I'm going to make sure that in the right speaker. Let me get up. Mm-hmm. Here, hold on to this.
All right, John and Andrew. I don't know, since this is my first threesome, I don't know who wants to feel this one, but what are the origins of shamanism?
That's a big question.
That's a very big question. I think the definition of shamanism is a broad one. Really, it's just the knowledge of the plants, all plants, from farming to medicines, to inebriants, to poisons, to everything from medicinal purposes to spiritual purposes. So,
the shaman and warfare as well. But yes. Don't you guys mention in your book that there is a difference between, let's say, a medicine woman or a herbalist? A shaman actually has to commune with the spiritual world, right? Or is that not necessary?
Well, to leave that out is to omit a very large part of what shamanism is. I think that was the point that we were trying to make.
Right. And, you know, we're actually working on a second edition of the book, and we want to actually add a little bit to that definition. There was there's a doctor, Neil Whitehead from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, who wrote a terrific book called Dark Shamans, and he really does an excellent job at providing heavy evidence of using the plants and drugs for warfare and for retributive killings and all sorts of things. And one thing a lot of people don't realize, there's a very misconstrued perspective of the healing aspects of shamanism, because in traditional shamanic societies, if somebody came down with a disease and had to be healed, that meant that another shaman had committed an act of sorcery, and that person had to be punished, which was usually by being put to death.
Serious stuff.
This is stuff that's omitted in 90% of the books out there on shamanism.
Doesn't the word shaman come from the word knowing? It's basically the Gnostic of the group or the tribe.
Yeah, exactly. And it's suggested to come from saman, I believe was what the word was, S-A-M-A-N. And, you know, that goes into other things too, and many other scholars linked that into fertility worship and things as well, but, you know, that's a whole other tale.
Let me get this straight. Let me see if I get this from what I've read and reading your book. But it seems that the shamans began in Siberia or Northern Europe, and then they migrated down, maybe with the Aryan or Indo-Europeans invasion. Is that how they got into the Mediterranean, or was there already a culture of shamanism there?
Different versions of shamanism appear everywhere, wherever there are people. So it's really, you know, the shaman, like I said, was the person that knew that specific area and all the plants that happened to grow there and what they could be used for. So this dates back very far.
Yeah, where the confusion comes in is actually with the word shaman itself, because it was a Norse and Ostiak and Semiades, I believe is who the people were, something like that. And, you know, they were the ones that used the word shaman, and it applied to them, and they were users of the Amanita muscaria mushroom specifically. But the term shaman has really become such a generic term that it's applied to, you know, medicine men and curanderos and peyoteros and ayahuasqueros and all of these different groups that are, while the underlying themes are the same, they're very different forms of what is now called shamanism. So, you know, it's really a tricky word to use, you know, and a lot of newer publications are really shedding a lot more light on the difficulty of even using that word itself.
So it's safe to say that all over the world, the priestcraft has always used herbs, at least in ancient times, right?
I think before even it was classified as a priestly class.
And what would you say from your research? What is the evidence that, let's say, the Jewish priests used herbs and mushrooms and so forth? Was the earliest we have?
Well.
I should direct the questions, but I don't know who knows what.
Yeah,
who's the shaman?
The evidence of its use, what we find is in 635 BCE, the first banning of plants for spiritual use in the Book of Law that was discovered. It's sort of what became the Book of Deuteronomy.
Oh, the one that magically appeared in the temple after all these years, right?
Right, I believe that was the one, but in it, yeah, exactly, that was one. And, in it, you know, it talks about the suppression of these types of things, so, you know, there's clear evidence that it was used before then, but I think that was probably the first time that its banning was, first attempted.
And even if you look in the Bible, even as far back as the book of Genesis, the stories that they were trying to keep alive, even Genesis, the Adam and Eve story where they take and eat something that opens their eyes. But why was it so important for these people to keep these stories alive when they obviously reflect something, like I said, something tangible, something that is actual history?
The Gnostics, if you read the Nag Hammadi Library on the origins of the world, there's a completely different version of Adam and Eve in the origins of the world that actually shows Eve giving birth to Adam and shows, you know, what we call Yahweh or the Lord in the Bible.
I'm just going to interject for a minute and say this. What we're talking about here is the link of the Eva race from Andromeda incarnating in, actually in the Pleiades. And this being, we know it's the same, energy of the Black Madonna, as at that time in the land of Pan of the ancient children of Mu, we were very, very dark skinned. And I mean, you know, when you really get down to it, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous color. It's just, and there has been then this breaking away of the continents and this evolution of our consciousness, and then for quite a big plunge to the starting over again stage of, you might say, de-evolution, when, again, we went into this barbarianism and this Stone Age activity for quite a few thousands of years from that point of life that we came from, and we were functioning as a fifth-dimensional society with the ships and full golden age consciousness, and we've had seven of those, and we're talking about a series of yugas, seven of them in nature, where now we're realizing at the very end of time another level of understanding. And what they've always said, the masters,
what the masters have always said is that, and everybody nudge me when I'm not, talking in the mic. I was just saying that the emergence now of the true knowledge that there are 13 constellations that we travel in the zodiac as a solar system. And this solar system, which we talk about as the system of Sol, has now four other, you know, sisters and brothers, you might say, suns. Well, again, Sirius A, Sirius B, and then Jupiter, along with our sun Sol. And so we are co-travelers in a unity consciousness where we are now using our super consciousness in a way in which our ego translates upward in the spiral to the level at which we can go beyond the knowledge of good and evil by experiment, by experience, and translate to the discipleship, which then translates to the initiate, which then translates into the cosmic Christ divine monadic state of the Gnostic one. And then we'll go on from there. Okay.
Not Jelani, we're the landlords, and they were the ones that were banished, not Adam and Eve. So
you have to remember that the Bible is not the actual word of God, as a lot of people believe. Even the translations of the Bible that lead up to the King James versions were voted on. The official divinely inspired word of God was agreed upon by the clergy. So any mention of entheogens in the Bible is going to be strictly symbolic, like an apple that's forbidden.
And yeah, and you mentioned also Ezekiel eating a scroll and having to talk to the Israelites. That seems to, I guess scroll is a kind of a code word, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and then after that he becomes a prophet.
And then you mentioned in Ezekiel destroying all these worship places under the tree, which is where the mushroom grows. That's another hint about it, right?
Yeah. And it's all symbolic. It's all symbolic. The stories are symbolic. The characters are symbolic. When you take a lot of symbols and combine them into one thing, you can either have an elaborate piece of art to look at, or you can have characters and have them have characteristics that reflect these things in nature.
Any other evidence of entheogens being in the Bible that you see in symbolic stories?
Well, I think definitely the story of manna is absolutely an entheogen. I think that's most likely the psilocybin cubensis mushroom. And if you get into the story, the so-called wilderness, if you look at Strong's Concordance, the word wilderness actually translates as midbar, which meant a pasture where cattle were grown. So, you know, they were finding manna in the cow pasture. So I think that's definitely one of the stories of entheogens in the Bible.
Okay, now we're going to go to the next one, right? There's another one? Or is that just the end of it?
Okay, just a second. I have to go to part two.
Did we ever find part two?
Yeah, right here.
Oh, good.
I'm sure what a lot of people want to know is what happens. The human mind is spiritually searching and is communing with nature in order to make a covenant or find the transcendental. When does that switch happen when a certain group decide that, okay, no more, we're going to start our war on drugs? Like you said, the Jews started a war on drugs in 600 B.C. and then the Catholic Church did it. Why does this happen, do you think?
Well, I think it's more an obsession with control and patriarchal religion. The matriarchal societies were very open about it, and they shared it, and then once cultures began to switch to patriarchal society, which if you want to learn more about the transference, read a book called Sovereignty by Dr. James DeMayo. He was actually able to prove that the shift from matriarchy to patriarchy happened due to the desertification of the Sahara and the Southern Asian region. All of the patriarchal religions and societies started pushing out from there. And that's what really began these king priests. The males ruled, the females were suppressed and dominated. And so that's when the control of religion and the gaining of wealth and everything really comes into play. And the suppression of women and the entheogens and everything that came along with that.
Around what time was this?
Well, it started in 4000 BCE, documented, you know, they can trace it sporadically, occasionally up until 5000 BCE, but the transfer really started at around 4000 BCE and it lasted up until about 1000 to 0, what we consider common era.
And today, you look at what we have going on today, it's, we have these traditions that nobody really seems to understand. We don't know why we do a lot of the things that we do on a yearly basis. And, it seems like the true knowledge of what we're talking about has been hidden up until even right now. So just because we can all read and write and the dark ages are over doesn't mean that the suppression has ended.
Right, it's very true, especially today's or the last 60 years of the whole the violent suppression of marijuana. I mean, wasn't hemp and cannabis very important for all ancient civilizations?
Just about all of them, you know, that we can find. It probably didn't enter Europe until about 1,000 or so, but it could definitely be found in ancient China and India and places like that in use. And I think its use industrially for paper and clothing and food and fuel can be traced back to about 10,000 BCE.
Wow. And this might be diverting a little, but you guys agree that part of the reason that there's such a hunt for marijuana is because of the end of prohibition? Somebody needed a boogeyman?
Yeah. Well, partly, and I don't think it's diverging at all from the subject. You know, Jack Hare is a close friend of ours, and you know, he's the one that brought back all the information on industrial hemp and everything. But there is definitely evidence to suggest that when alcohol prohibition ended, they needed their next scapegoats. You know, what has been documented is William Randolph Hearst and Henry J. Anslinger and Andrew Mellon. We're all related and working together and basically conspired to outlaw hemp without any scientific evidence whatsoever. And Anslinger basically just made up all sorts of things that Hearst ran in his newspapers, and Hearst was Hearst was at risk of losing all of his timberland that he had just purchased to hemp farmers, in paper production. So he wanted to get cheap, free paper from trees, and there was a decorticating machine invented in 1917 that stood to revolutionize the entire paper industry, and it was actually, the research was funded by Hearst's largest competitor. So it was important for Hearst to suppress industrial hemp, and the DuPont company and everybody was able to get on board on that because they all stood to have their profits crushed if natural renewable products were as good or better than the synthetic ones that they were creating.
Yeah, our struggle is the same struggle the ancients have it. So it's just the, I guess, same old shit, different flies. Okay, just to be blunt. And, you know, the other thing which I've been, you know, honestly, in my awakening journey is before I just assumed LSD was a no-no because it was chemically produced or synthetic, but actually, you guys show in your book, LSD is found in nature, right?
Absolutely, it is. It's found in ergot, it's found in morning glories, but, you know, its natural form is LSA, and when it's extracted, it becomes LSD. It's actually part, you know, it's generally found in fungus on rye wheat, and that's what a lot of the witch trials were about in Salem and things like that, is ergot poisoning on the rye wheat. So people would go crazy because they were eating, they were thinking they were going crazy. And some of the raw ergot forms can be very deadly or toxic as well and can have some serious negative effects. But, yeah, it's definitely natural.
The mystery religions were very big in using ergot during initiation.
I think they all used whatever was local.
Right, whatever they needed, but it was still an essential part of spiritual knowledge.
Well, you know, Dr. Albert Hoffman, who is the guy that invented LSD in the 40s, and Gordon Wasson wrote a book with Richard Evan Schultes called The Secrets of Ulysses or something like that, and they go into the history that they believe that the secret Kaikion elixir was made from ergot. And, you know, there's a lot of different theories now on what it was made from. A lot of them are coming more back to possible regular mushroom extracts because, you know, the process of producing the ergot in a form where it's not deadly is just such a trying task. And obviously, mushrooms are something that can just be found and eaten right away. But if we look in the ancient religious stories, we see the stories of strong wine everywhere, and the wines that had to be diluted because they were so strong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of anthropologists and archaeologists will actually argue, well, you know, people must have not been so resistant to alcohol as they are today. So, you know, their minds are different or something. Yeah, you know, it has nothing to do with that. They were, you know, the Beer Purity Act of the 1500s in Germany had nothing to do with, you know, keeping beer clean. It had to do with keeping the entheogens and the psychedelics out. It was actually a prohibitive law.
You guys talk about the story of Socrates. That had to do with entheogens as well, didn't it?
Well, because he was smart enough to figure things out for himself and was going to be initiated. It was either be silenced or be killed for something that he figured out on his own.
And that's why they brought up they trumped up the charges of blasphemy.
Right. Yeah, he basically was teaching people the mysteries of Kaikion and et cetera. He was, you know, he was smarter than everybody else, figured it out, refused the initiation, so they forced him to death for revealing the ancient mysteries. They forced him to take a deadly drug for revealing a drug that causes psychedelic bliss.
There's a lot of irony in your book and in our interview, all this. You can cut the irony with a knife.
Well, the experience was really important for these people. And I guess when you get to controlling massive amounts of people, eliminating this particular, you know, experience is a key in their control.
Yeah, it's making sure nobody is taking a spiritual path or going, liberating their consciousness, basically.
Right. They're telling the masses that in order for you to communicate with God, you have to come to us, whereas you can communicate with the gods in the privacy of your own life. You don't need to go to a church or a pastor or anything like that.
Part three.
I wanted to interject real quick. Earlier this year, I believe in late.
Actually, I gotta go back here.
What's happening? Gotta go back to the list of bunch of them up at the top. You have to do something to clean up your cookies.
I wanted to interject real quick. Earlier this year, I believe in late May or maybe June, John Hopkins University released a study on the religious experience and psilocybin mushrooms, and they were able to show that the religious experience described by the mystics and the ones that that we gave our patients in the laboratory by description were no different. You know, and it's all obvious that the religious experience and the psychedelic experience is the same. You know, a lot of people will try and argue that the entheogenic religious experience is some downgraded form, and you're only supposed to achieve it by meditation. But yeah. I always argue that it's the plants that feed us and keep us alive. So why shouldn't they give us our consciousness as well?
Right. That was another question I wanted to ask you guys. What do you tell, let's say, a Zen Buddhist who meditates 8 hours a day, or some Catholic nun, a Teresa d'Avila, and they can reach that mystical experience, and they say, see, I don't need drugs. What do you tell them? You simply tell them, we've got a shortcut, or...
Well, but is it really a shortcut, and how do we know that the experiences are the same or to the same depth? I don't remember the proper name of it, but there's two paths to enlightenment in Hinduism and Buddhism that say, you know, that the one path is using intuitions and the other path is not. But to say that these religions are not based on intuitions, I think is an ignorance because, Gordon Wasson and many others have shown that Soma was, Amanita muscaria, and we show that it was many intuitionic substances. Dr. Christian Raj has shown that there are 108 psychedelic plants dedicated to Shiva. Buddha ate 5 hemp seeds a day under the tree on his path to enlightenment. What was he doing under the hemp tree? Was he only eating the seeds, or was he smoking it too?
Watching Cheech and Chong, maybe.
Right. You know, there's other stories that Gordon Lawson goes into, I believe, in Persephone's Quest about the origins of Buddhism and the story of Buddha eating a mushroom and dying. Yeah, so was he really eating the mushroom and dying, or was he having a mystical death and rebirth experience? So the Buddhists and the Hindus that argue that, well, Hindus don't normally argue because Hindus drink bang all the time, which is obviously made from marijuana, so they can't argue too much that it's not based on drugs.
Right.
But the Buddhists try to, and Buddhism is just a derivative religion from Hinduism.
But what about, let's say DMT is in our body? So we could, it's possible to access DMT without exterior forces, right?
Well, that's a very good point that you bring up, because all of these people that think they're achieving these mystical states without drugs, they're most likely, as Dr. Strassman showed in his book, DMT, the Spirit Molecule, they're altering the endogenous levels of DMT in their brain, which is the most powerful psychedelic on Earth. So, when you would take DMT, you're just sort of taking a Nero cocktail. Sort of goes to Terrence McKenna used to say, you're just sort of adding to what was already there.
Let's
So moving on, I know you guys dedicated your book to John Allegro. I think, Dion, you're the expert on John Allegro.
He is.
Well, I think that's what you told me, Andrew.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, okay. I thought you were being sarcastic.
No.
Okay. Would you tell us a little bit about John Allegro, his story, and how he's being redeemed in our modern times?
Well, he's slowly being redeemed. You know, we've won over a few scholars recently. Actually, Andy's in my book, Astrotheology and Shamanism, was the first to take a serious approach at analyzing John Allegro's research and going through his footnotes, double-checking things, and using additional sources to back his information up. In fact, just this last week, I started the official John Marco Allegro website that I'm working on with John Allegro's daughter, Judith Ann Brown. And if anybody's interested in checking out the website, it's johnallegro.org. John Allegro grew up in England. He began his studies after leaving the British Royal Navy to study as a Methodist minister. And as he began studying, he wanted to study languages, so he began studying language at Manchester University. As he began studying languages, just too many questions began coming up to him as he progressed, and he eventually won his master's degree for his work on the Balam oracles, and then from there transferred over to Oxford and was considered a very strong up-and-coming philologist. He was nominated to be the first British representative of the newly discovered Dead Sea Scrolls that were discovered in 1947, but they didn't really become well-known until the early 50s. He was assigned a teaching position at Manchester and later at Manchester in 1954. Began his work translating the Dead Sea Scrolls and working on everything. And then as he began working on it, he just realized that he could no longer be a Christian, and he decided to become agnostic. So he was really...
And he was the only I'm sorry, John. He was the only secular person, right? Didn't everybody else... priests or...
They were all Catholic priests, or they worked for... one of them wasn't a priest, worked for a seminary. The other one was a Protestant... John Strugnell, and he later converted to Catholicism to gain the favor of the Ecole Biblique, who had control over the Dead Sea Scrolls. John Allegro didn't toe the line. He thought that all of the information scrolls should get out to the public as soon as they were, as soon as he finished writing them up, and he wanted to publish them and get them out to the public. And the rest of the Dead Sea Scrolls team, including Father Joseph Millick, who was the head of the team, attacked Allegro, and they basically tried to ruin his name. And the rest of the team held on to all of their translations for over 40 years, and Strugnell actually didn't publish any of his until 1997. So you gotta figure, he started working on the scrolls in 1954. Allegro was actually ready to publish all of his stuff by 1960, and they actually asked him to suppress all of his information until they all had a definitive version of the scrolls put together. He went along with it for a little bit, but was still writing other book projects to bring money into the scrolls project because they were low on funds and getting damaged, and with the war in Palestine at the time, between Jordan and Israel, Jordan lost that area of land, and the land went over to Israel. You know, so John Allegro was really the one who publicized the scrolls, got the information about them out to the public, raised awareness that there was, you know, that they needed to get out. He was the one that fought his whole life to make sure the public was allowed to be aware of the scrolls. And he was really attacked for that. But in 1968, he published his definitive edition, Discoveries in the Judean Desert. Immediately went from there. He left the school in 1970 before his most famous book, which was called The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross, went to print. He had just had enough of academia and just decided to leave. But
can I stop you for 1 second, Jen?
Sure.
Then why did John Allegro become agnostic? Was it the information of the Dead Sea Scrolls that basically pointed to a mythical Christ? Is that what turned him?
Right. Well, you know, he started realizing that the foundations of religion were based on fertility and drugs and sun worship and star worship, and he just, you know, he realized that that what he was being told was Christianity and what he was discovering in his research just wasn't the same thing.
Right. And the rest of the group assumed the Dead Sea Scrolls was the smoking gun to prove the historical Christ, and it became quite the opposite.
Right, and he thought that the scrolls could be used to show how so many of the ideas that have been given Christianity existed in the area before the so-called era of Jesus, and show that, you know, that it was really, Jesus was really a mythical character, and, you know, people like the Teacher of Righteousness of the Essenes and many other, you know, Egyptian priests and kings and Roman priests and kings, everybody were given these same attributes as gods and deities. And all of these attributes were really based on sun and fertility worship and then the underlying drug themes. You know, what's interesting is, you know, Allegra spent 20 years basically putting together the research for the sacred mushroom of the cross. And, you know, he was attacked before most of the scholars had even read it. Nobody ever tried to do a piece-by-piece breakdown of his research and analyze it and critique it seriously. No scholar ever attempted that until Andy and I undertook that.
Really? And that long?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that long. And, you know, nobody ever really went through and looked at his references and things like that. And, you know, earlier this year, I did an article with Mike Hoffman from Ego Death, Gordon Lawson and John Allegro on Amanita and the Bible. We break down the whole history of the debates between Allegro and Lawson and all these people that attacked Allegro and basically destroyed his career and ruined his reputation based on false information. Sacred Mushroom of the Cross came out like the first week of May, and on May 16th, 15 scholars published an article in the London Times saying that the entire book was false and it had no merits. And, you know, what I discovered looking at this, looking at the time from the time the book went to print to the time the article went to print, these scholars wouldn't have even had time to get the book, much less to review 143 pages of in-depth footnotes and, you know, and cross-checking and sourcing all of this information. You know, it took us several years to do it, and
this pretty much ruined his career, or at least his reputation.
Oh, yeah, completely. And he was in shock, you know, and he became very depressed because no one took him seriously. And, you know, surely there were scholars under the table that did admit that his work had merits, but nobody would admit it publicly. He staked his entire reputation on the sacred mushroom of the cross and put everything he had into it and took the hit of his life on it. And because of the division between himself and the other Dead Sea Scroll scholars, he was already considered the maverick, the one that was out of control and wild and didn't toe the line and, you know, had his own ideas and beliefs. So he'd already been marginalized by biblical scholars even before then.
Wow, and he died still, his reputation ruined and everything. And
yeah.
So how did you come about with his daughter, too? How did you start a relationship with his daughter to write the ship?
During the writing of Astrotheology and Shamanism, we realized that the only way we were going to be able to prove that this argument had merit was to prove that the attacks on Allegro were, in fact, false. And so Judith Ann Brown, who is Judith Allegro, John's daughter, had just published John Marco Allegro, The Maverick of the Dead Sea Scrolls, in I believe May of 2005. I had tracked her down in December of 2004. Took me almost a year to track her down. And she was just delighted that somebody was finally taking her research seriously, taking John's research seriously. She was very helpful. We sent her manuscripts and things, and she edited and fact-checked and went through all John's archives and personal letters and things to help us make sure that everything was as correct as we could make it.
Um,
Why would they want to keep those veiled from their flock?
Well,
that wasn't the one. I believe that was the end of that.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. Number, sorry.
Five, three, zero.
413-4511, 4515, and 4520.
And what are you going to play for a song? About those I don't know. The guy's got to pick this. I mean, what beautiful material. Have any bird tribe music?
Just a second. I have some interesting
sound of music.
Yes.
I can't see. I haven't got my glasses on. Tell me.
Oh.
Tell everybody.
Ladysmith Black Mambazo, The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
Oh, yes, let's do that. Is it clear? Did you find a listen to a clear one?
Yeah.
Family lives close to the jungle. At the end of the day, they all sit together around the fire. They have their supper, then relax and talk a little. The youngest boy becomes afraid. He hears all the sounds of the wild animals in the forest. Cheetahs, wolves, jackals and lions. He starts crying at the darkness and wild sounds and feeling weird. Then his mother takes him in her arms and sings to him. Family is always strong together. They protect one another. Grandparents, his father and mother, uncles, aunts, cousins, brothers and sisters. They all join and sing together. Soon he falls asleep. Under the beautiful song, fills his ear.
Thank you.
Where do we want to go now? Yes. I can.
There is something else that you would like to involve.
Yes.
I know exactly. We gotta play Global Spirit.
Right.
Oh, this is so, okay now. Commander Seth, what do we have to the top of the hour or anything like that, or? Hello. 10 till, is it? Aye, aye, sir. Aye, aye, aye. Okay. We'll just do part of this then. It's just so precious. We'll get started.
Yeah.
Everyone. And, I'm just, thank you for all that we get to be able to do together. All these nights. Let me have a situation. I just gotta look on there. And Rama, in terms of the shaman relationship that they were just making very specific, that certain group of natives who talked about the shaman being aligned with
the Siberian shamans that migrated.
Which is Anastasia again.
Right.
And also that has to do with the galactics again. Because the shamans from Siberia are from the land of Hyperborea, where the energy of the little Ursa Minor bear of the pole star is in that territory. Now, this is another thing. Marianne, you're still on here. No?
Okay.
The pole and has moved to Ohio. I forgot the exact spot.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was on the border of these two counties. Medina County, and there was the other one. What was the other one? Has to do with Swami Porna's place too, the Poconos. That was Sky Top, no. I forgot the other one. All I can say is that means of what we call the time of Atlantis, and even at the time of Mu, remember, 35,000 BC, we had breakup of the land of Mu quite progressed. It actually began 65 million years ago, the breakup, with off-planet nuclear warfare going on. Ay, 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 everybody. Yet, the reason I'm talking about this part is just prepare yourself to go back to understanding now what the halls of Amenti and the teachings of Thoth and Isis and Osiris and Saint Germain Osiris was on the ray of the Saint Germain energy too. So, okay, let's just start. Okay? Let's get there. I'm sorry. Shattering. You want to say any more about that? Ancient land, where Queen Ming Mei presided as galactic health
there were so many different stories about the various kingdoms that were going on during the time of Hyperborea and the various peoples. This very good.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute, I got the wrong one. Go ahead.
Okay.
Talk a little more.
Many of the pieces of different parts of...
Oh, no, I'm in the right place. Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead and finish your sentence.
I just wanted to say there are many cosmic movies that have been made about the people of Hyperborea and the different lands that were occurring at that time. This ties in with the stories about the ancient warriors like Conan the Barbarian and the other blue-eyed Aryan races that actually came from Pleiades and from Lyra and Vega and Sirius, and they got caught in the Maya.
Okay.
I passed the talk.
All right, here we go now.
Over the years, I've come to realize that compared with those of us who grew up in the Western industrialized world, indigenous peoples have a profoundly different relationship to nature, to the earth, and to the realm of the spirit. For native peoples everywhere, life is a gift that must be respected and honored. Anunnak is a shaman, healer, storyteller, and carrier of the Kilapt or wind drum. Anunnak is an Eskimo Kalaallit from Greenland, born into a family of traditional healers in the far north. He received his shamanic training from his grandmother, who prepared him to venture out and to alert the world about the melting of what his people call the Big Ice of Greenland, which holds enough fresh water to raise the world's oceans by 23 feet. One of the most respected and well-traveled of Eskimo elders, Anunnak is a shaman, a healer, and a carrier of the ancient wisdom and knowledge that has sustained his people for thousands of years. Florida Mayo is a Kudandana Espiritu, a Mayan spirit healer who was recognized at an early age to have the gift of sight, a gift which allows her to see into the world of spirits, animals, and plants. Florida Mayo uses her spirit world connections in her healing work, and as a member of the International Council of 13 Indigenous Grandmothers, Florida Mayo travels the world to raise awareness of the sacred nature of all life, and to call attention to the unfolding devastation of the planet. And now, we invite you to witness Florida Mayo, the Mayan spirit healer, meeting for the first time Anunnak, the Eskimo shaman. Welcome to Global Spirit, the shaman, the spirit healer, and the earth. I'm wondering if we could honor both of your wonderful traditions by beginning with a blessing or a chant of some kind. Florida Mayo, could you please?
I first would like to honor Uncle and thank our beloved Creator, Mother, God, Creator of the heavens and the earth. Thank you for the beauty of the moment. Thank you for the beauty of the light of peace that you're bringing upon this place. Thank you, Spirit, Grandmothers of the Four Directions, Spirit of our ancestors, infinite mystery of the cosmos. Thank you for bringing us together. This is for you, Grandfather. Thank you.
And thank you so much, Stephen.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have a privilege to hold something from my grandmother. I come from the top of the world. And the medicine you gave me, the medicine of the earth, does not grow in my land. But what grows in my land is the heart. So it would be a great honor if you allowed me to chant you the melting the ice in the heart of man.
Thank
for welcoming
you.
You to my presence and to my world.
Thank you.
Oh, 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 oh.
This is medicine from the stars, other than being a human, physical human, I'm also a child from the stars. Thank you.
Thank you both. It's quite beautiful and haunting, if I may say so. Uncle, I've been very struck by one of the lines, the images that you use in your work, that we must learn how to melt the ice in our own hearts.
Yes.
Well, what do you mean by that? Why is it so necessary for us to do this strong spiritual work, to melt the ice in our hearts?
One day, I'd like you to meet my mother. You would just love her. She's really a special person. She told us that it's very easy to melt the ice on the ground. All you need to do is to touch the surface of the ice at 40 below Fahrenheit. Within a minute, you will see the imprint of your hand for that chemistry, you know. It's simple science reaction of the heat of the palm and the cold of the ice. And she said, the hardest ice to be melted is only in the heart of man. She told us. She says, only by melting the ice in the heart of man, man will have a chance to change and begin using his knowledge wisely. Wonderful.
Florida Mayo, you don't have much ice in Nicaragua, but is the metaphor still true?
Absolutely. The Maya nation comes from the Yucatan
mm-hmm.
all the way down into Nicaragua.
Mm-hmm.
So I have Mayan blood.
Mm-hmm.
And it is told in our prophecy
mm-hmm.
that the spirit of the feminine is coming in with her gentleness.
Mm-hmm.
She's coming in with her embracing humanity. Indirectly, to me, she is one who is melting that place where we lack freedom. When we are not from the heart,
we're not free.
It's so interesting. It's so interesting. You know, we have an old, old song back home. Nobody knows who wrote it. Nobody knows where it comes from, but everybody recognizes it. It says that one day, I as a man will take the hand of the woman and bring her to the side of me to become equal. So I as a man can arrive at my rightful destiny, whatever the destiny is.
Mm-hmm.
When that time comes, that's when that feminine world, I don't know if I told you, but I come from a matriarchal society where grandmothers decide. And then they give the instruction to the man, and the man counsels to how to carry that decision of the woman, of the grandmothers. So I grew up under that auspice of the powerful woman, their old grandmothers, deciding what will be, and then the men counseling about it, to how to carry the decision to real life.
While reading about your respective stories, I discovered something fascinating that you share in common, despite the great distance between your cultures. You're coming from Nicaragua, you're coming from Greenland, and that is, you were both originally recognized as having a gift of the soul, a gift of healing, from a council of women, which I find quite remarkable. Could you please begin there and tell us about the origin of your name and how you were first recognized as a curandera espiritual?
Flor de Mayo is a plant that's used for women's medicine.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was a midwife, and she used the Flor de Mayo for lactation after the mother had her baby. And also it is used to shrink the womb. This is the medicinal properties of the plant. My mother said that when I was born, that I had shown physical signs that I was going to continue with the medicine, our inherited medicine, woman's medicine. And so she knew from the time that I was little that I would come, you know, with el don, the gift, that I would have the gift, and that I would have it throughout my life.
How about yourself, Uncle Anangag? Do you recall the story behind your name and when you were first recognized as having something special?
I was born in 1947. That makes me a pretty old man now. When I was born, I was born the day after an enormous blizzard where my mother and father was traveling by sled, the dog team, the legs of the big island of Kavaktaslo, the biggest island off the coast of Greenland. But at that time also my grandmother sent a telegram to my father and all his brothers that if you want to see your father alive, you better come home now. But then this ice was already built then, and nothing could travel. So it took him 7 months to travel to the back to his village. So I was 7 months when I met my grandmother, and immediately she declared that Angama got it, whatever it is that Angama has. And this time of year, this is the time where the new messenger of the new year comes and lands in our land, and the one who sees it first and announces it to grandmother at the feast on March 21st, the New Year celebration, we receive a gift. I was so sorry. That was 55 years ago, this time of year. And I grew up knowing that I got something, whatever it is that I got. There, nobody talked about it, what it is that he has. Myself there, when somebody walks, we walk into the house to the presence of my grandmother, she will always say, oh, I've got it. And I will look around, if I have some sand or snow around my feet, I will wipe them off so I can look like everyone else. So I grew up under that.
Thank you for that marvelous story, Uncle. Now we're going to move into some special film footage that was taken of you in Greenland last year, the Sacred Fire Ceremony. Could you kindly narrate it for us?
Oh, I would love to.
This is the story of the big ice. There was a coarse girl, and out of that went born the big ice. And she grew and grew and grew, so we moved with the big ice. And when she started retreating, we went back. Joy started. And when we came home, there was no tree standing. Now, the big ice have retreated, and the climate has become warmer, now the trees are standing again for the first time in 20,000 years because of the climate change. Here are the grandmothers who cut trees for the first time in 20,000 years. Grandmothers are responsible for the firewood. So here they are coming back from the mountain. The big ice in here. That used to be about 10 kilometers wide and 1 mile tall. Imagine that that's 1 mile tall in 1960. But now it's just 900 feet tall. I'm walking to the big wall of the ice, like my ancestors have done for countless generations, to be in front of this big ice and touch upon that ice in recognition of the Creator. I am a speck on the face of the earth in front of the big ice. This is the path of the river which goes through the big ice. I'm carrying a remnant of the big ice. This is the heart, which is crystal clear ice, millions of years old. I'm making fire around it to signify the melting of the big ice. Fire! I come from a shamanic family. I asked for permission to burn my regalia because my uncle says something has to die before something else can live. I had to burn my shaman clothes so I can come to the next level of being a great shaman. I want to thank all those who have come from around the world to partake in the ceremony of the coming home of the sacred fire. I invited elders from all over the world, people who understand what it means for the earth, the melting of the big ice. And the people who showed up are shamans from Siberia, from Nepal, from Japan, from New Zealand, from Amazonia, from Africa, from Europe. So the Europeans and North Americans came. So they saw firsthand themselves the impact they're doing on the melting of the big ice. Jane Goodall, she had made the promise that she would come, and she came, and she flew literally from Tanzania to Greenland nonstop. For the first time in 20,000 years, a fire was born out of Mother Earth on the land which is called the top of the world, Greenland. After 40 years of work, I brought home the sacred fire, fulfilled the prophecy.
so I can make the fire in our ceremony. Because the way we live in Los Angeles, in Rio de Janeiro, in Tokyo, in London, for every trees we cut in Amazonia, I want you to know that we are the first one to feel the changes of earth in Greenland. I come from the greatest land on earth, did you know that? The land of the Eskimo is the biggest land on earth. It's about 16 million square kilometers, that 10 million square miles. 13 time zones from the east to the west. Big 747 plane will fly 9 hours from the top to the bottom of the land of the Eskimos.
One of the most challenging things I've heard you say is that the greatest distance that someone can travel is the distance between their mind and their heart. How far is that?
My father, blessed his soul, he sent all of us to see the world. He had tuberculosis, he could not travel. So the moment we were able to, he sent us to the world and said, come home and tell me what you have seen. So we traveled, all of us. So we decided to give him a map, an atlas of the world, a map of the world. And there we decided to write, to make lines in 8 different colors from where we had been. Because that's what he asked us to do. So we did that. Somebody said, Father, what do you think? And this is the profound moment where you know exactly what happened. He looked to all of us. We had all become silent, including the kids. And he says, you know, son, so you think it's the greatest distance from here, and he pointed to the sky. And he said, no, this is not the greatest distance. And he says, the greatest distance in existence of man is not from here to there, nor from there to here. Nay, the greatest distance is from his mind to his heart, unless he conquers that distance. He can never learn to soar like an eagle and realize his own immensity within. That very moment is an awakening of everyone in that house, that little house. And I've been carrying it ever since. For a mile. What to talk about?
Okay, that's as far as we go. We're going to say goodnight with a song. And I'm going to read just one little quote from Sri Swami Purna before we do that. And this is what it says.
It says, walking meditation to silence one walks, feeling nature, identifying with creatures, plants, and earth alike. Even the sky becomes an integral part of oneself. There is no hurry, no direction. You ready, Rama? No destination hurry. Just walking and awareness of the all. One feels Mother Nature holding you in her palm, giving you energy. You are filled with the vibration of cosmic consciousness. The body is full of energy. Rama, now we only got 2 minutes. You gotta tell me when you're ready. Okay. One enters the state called Bhavna, capital B-H-A, V as in victory, N-A. The experience of this energy. We bid you farewell until tomorrow when we come again together at Stargate Roundtable tomorrow, Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Please join us and give generously without this open line. I mean, let's just confirm now that divine prosperity comes in. BBS Radio Station 2, here comes the music. Namaste, everyone.
Namaste.
Thank you.